Hey, everybody, it's episode 307 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It's Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. I am Chris. With me is Druten.
Hello.
And Walnut.
Yeah, I'm here.
How you guys doing?
Not too bad.
Yeah, you're both employed. I mean, Drew, you were already employed, but yeah. Richie, you are now employed.
I mean, I technically have been employed for 2 weeks. We just didn't start working.
But I thought you also weren't getting, like,
no,
insurance
or
anything.
I was able to fight that, and because
oh, that's
of,
good.
Because of me, they insured us since July, because I made a big stink. I was going to make a big stink about it if I had to, but I got in touch with HR, and they gave us insurance, so I've been fine. Yeah, I've technically been employed for 2.5 weeks. I just haven't worked.
Good job. That's really bravo.
I mean, that's on them, not on me at this point.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's been a week.
Yeah, it's been quite a freaking week.
So, the end of this episode is going to be us talking all about Last of Us 2. But the beginning of this is going to be pretty shitty.
Yeah.
The first two news stories are just not great. But you know, they're news. They're worth talking about because, you know, people suck. Mm-hmm. And it's worth pointing out that people suck. So first, we've got, as I titled it, people really suck. Kind of spinning out of The Last of Us 2, Neil Druckmann and Laura Bailey, have gotten all sorts of just horrendous, threats and harassment online over the last, you know, couple of weeks or so.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, really sure how far back some of it goes. Both of them kind of posted on Twitter about it. Laura was on July 3rd and Neil was on July 5th. So he did his a couple days after hers came out and everything. A lot of news sites were picking this up when it first happened. Laura's tweet is a screenshot with spoilers removed of a bunch of different messages and tweets that she has gotten on different platforms. I think a lot of these are Instagram messages because they don't look like Facebook or Twitter.
They're DMs in general, so could be
yeah.
any of them.
It doesn't look like Twitter or Instagram or Facebook messages.
Yeah,
that's why I think it's Instagram, but I don't know. But so like they read things like, "I'm going to kill you because you blank in The Last of Us Part 2."
The ones I hate the most are, "I hope your parents die by heart cancer for killing my blank blank," and "I will find you, and I will kill your kid for that. Just wait for that."
And that was the same person.
Those two that I just said were the same person.
And that person's, like, icon is Ellie.
Yeah. I just, like, and Druckmann's aren't any better. Like, one person says, "I hope you get the coronavirus. Go die in a hole, you radical feminist. Radical feminist scum. Hopefully COVID-19 kills your whole toxic feminist studio."
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of, like, anti-Semitic stuff in here. Somebody saying, "I hope that a real fan will kill you." And then they include the Westworld bitch, which is Shannon Woodward, who played Dina. She is, I don't know, I only watched the first season of Westworld. I think she might have been in seasons 2 and 3. She was also on that show Raising Hope, if either of you guys watched that.
I didn't. I always wanted to, but I didn't.
It was an okay show.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, people that, and like, the worst part is, I'm sure half of these people probably didn't even play the game.
Yeah, they're reading the leaks, and they don't know what's going on, and they're seeing the spoiler of whatever happens potentially at the beginning, or at midway point, or whatever, and they're freaking out, like, "Oh my god!" And I don't understand how people have this level of fucking entitlement over a goddamn video game that they feel it's necessary to threaten somebody who, and I'm not trying to belittle Laura Bailey's job, but you're going to threaten somebody who read a few lines off a goddamn piece of paper. Like, Laura had nothing to do with the script and with the writing of the story. And whether or not they did, they don't deserve tweets like this. They don't deserve fucking messages like this. It pisses me off.
No, writing a piece of fiction does not warrant death threats.
Exactly. Like,
not at all.
This is fucking fake ass shit.
Alright, maybe there could be some fiction that you write that maybe warrants death threats.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
not this.
honestly, like, I don't think anyone deserves death threats. Like, if somebody writes something super offensive, then they should get, there should be repercussions for it. But murder isn't necessarily the right repercussion.
No.
Yeah, like, for something like this, for something that, it's a video game. Nothing about it is real. These characters do not really exist. The people that portray them are still alive. They're fine. I actually, I watched two, videos today. One of them was it was a podcast with, they were both from Kinda Funny. It was, Neil Druckmann, Ashley Johnson, and Troy Baker for the first half, talking about the game. And then the second one was, just Greg Miller interviewing Laura Bailey about the game. And, like, they're all friends.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, to the point where apparently at some point, Neil Druckmann, Ashley Johnson, and Laura Bailey were bowling together when they were when they were trying to convince Neil to cast Laura.
Yeah, makes sense.
Like, but like, there's no reason to get so worked up over fictional fucking characters.
No, and the thing that pisses me off so much about this is, like, I bring it up, and for instance, I brought it up around Eric on 4th of July when we had our barbecue. And he sat there and he's like, well, that's fucking humans. That's humans for you. That's humans. I'm like, that's the problem though. I'm disgusted by this. You should be too. And we shouldn't be complacent in that, oh, this is just how things are. We should fucking do something about this. And there's so many people out there that see this shit and it's just like, oh, that's just what people do. But it's not what they should do. And we should do something about it. Like,
I mean, the problem is there's nothing you can do about it. The internet gives people, like, the ability to say and do whatever they want because they're anonymous.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Until you take away the ability for people to post on the internet without supplying their full name and address, like, there's no accountability for anybody except for celebrities. Like, honestly, celebrities are the only ones with accountability because everything they say is public. Their lives are public. Their jobs require the public. If they do something wrong, their livelihoods are over. If your average douchebag on the internet tells some lady that I'm going to find where you live and slaughter you for what you did to blank in a video game, that person has nothing happen to them ever.
Yeah, and that's the I'm not saying we need to dox all. I'm against doxing. I'm not saying we need to, like, get somebody to send out all these people's personal private information. But I'm sure there's people out there that can track down these people, find out who they are, and get them fired from their jobs or whatever. It's happened so many times already with protests that have been going on and white supremacists that maybe people who send death threats over a video game should probably lose their job too.
I mean, you're not wrong. The problem is they're like, if their stuff isn't public, like, you can't see their names in these messages. So, like, people that get threats like these, especially celebrities, like, they can go to the police, they can file reports, but unless that person has their actual name or has ever given any sort of real information, like, there's just nothing anyone can do, and it's shitty.
Yeah, and it's, like, at this point, we have to do whatever we can to demonize it, even though that'll probably make people, like, want to do it more because they're fucking assholes, but, like, it's just, it is so disgusting, this shit that you're seeing over this, because, like, oh, there's an agenda in this game, fuck this game, and, oh, like we went over that tweet like 2 weeks ago, or a week ago, about, how, quote, the gays shouldn't be in video games, and it's just like, grow the fuck up, it's 2020, who gives a shit anymore? And
honestly, I don't think we even talked about that on the show, that was just in the chat, where, like, that person had that tweet, and, yeah, like, what?
Yeah, like,
yeah, no.
Grow up. If something happens to somebody, it's a piece of fucking art. Who cares? Like, don't get that attached to it.
And, like, I'm not going to spoil anything for the game yet because we'll do that later. But, like, in those two podcasts I listened to, like, Ashley and Joel, or shit, I just called him Joel, Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson, they were both, like, actually tearing up talking about different experiences from acting and recording, like, from doing, like, the mocap and everything.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Yeah, just because of how emotional some of that stuff was. Mm-hmm. And then, in the episode with Laura Bailey, she was basically saying how much she both hates the character that she portrayed, but also loves her.
Yeah.
And, like, having played the whole game, I get it.
Yeah. And I played the game, I beat the game, it's a very emotional game. I got bummed out at times. I got, like, like, I could only play it for a few hours at a time because of how heavy it is, but, like, I would never, in my right mind, go and send death threats over someone, to someone because of how they made something. If I didn't like how, I'll be 100% candid right now. I wasn't a fan of the ending. I'm not sending somebody death threats and shit. Because, you know what? That was their take on it, and I think it could have been better a different way, but that's, I didn't make it. So that's just on me.
Yeah, exactly.
If
you want to create something, if somebody has such a strong feeling that they can make something better, go fucking make something yourself. Don't be a douchebag on the internet to everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so disgusting. And
but yeah, the...
Yeah.
It's... In a lot of cases, it is out of control. Because even not just like this situation, if you just look at anyone that posts anything, especially if it's a female in games media, yeah, like, they just get fucking trashed by everybody for every opinion they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and, like, actually, so there's been a whole big thing in the wrestling community. This actually happened a few weeks ago, and this will kind of more tie into the next news story. With a lot of, especially female wrestlers, speaking out about treatment they got from more seasoned male wrestlers. Especially, a lot of it was over in the UK wrestling scene. And the shit women were getting from male wrestling fans because a male wrestler fucked them over is, like, it's ridiculous. And it's just like, you wouldn't, if this was a male wrestler saying a woman wrestler did something, there's no way all these guys would be saying shit about the male wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's just, it's so fucked up how strongly still, and especially in the nerd communities and video game communities and even wrestling, sexism is. I don't understand it. Like, it's just, I've said this forever, nerds suck. They really do.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is, like, as much as I would love to be able to ruin someone's career or whatever for saying dumb shit on the internet, like, then it becomes a slippery slope of regulating things people say, and how far does things go with that? Like,
yeah, clearly, like, it sucks.
Death threats kind of level are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, but like, at some like this point, person it's also that's...
Like, eh, when you get to, like, threatening to dox people and attack family, it's, like, another level of, yeah, no, don't, you shouldn't be able to say that.
Yeah, like, the person but. That said, I'm going to find you and kill your child, like, or the one that's, I'm going to find where you live and slaughter you, like, those people deserve to probably actually be arrested. They're not going to go to jail, but, like, a cop should show up, they should have charges pressed against them.
Yep.
Like, they should have a criminal record for... whatever this ends up being. Like, it's not slander, but I don't know what the actual charge would be.
It's threat to a human life.
It's assault.
Yeah.
That is
a felony, and it is jail time. Like, straight up. Like, and that's the problem, because it's all digital and it's hard to trace, or, like, the person, like, there needs to be more cyber crime, like, organizations out there to stop this shit. So, because Laura Bailey lives in L.A. or Southern California, but maybe one of the people is in New Jersey, or one of the people are in Florida, like, or somebody is on the other side of the fucking country, world in Europe, sending this shit. So it's hard to, like, police as well.
Yeah.
So, like,
I think, yeah,
it's a slippery slope, because, yeah, I don't think. I think the internet needs to be free for everyone and whatnot, and, like, no, like what was that, shit, that bill that the U.S. was going to pass a few years ago that everyone was against?
SOPA?
Yeah, one? I think it was SOPA.
Yeah, there were two different ones, but yeah.
But, like, there still needs to be some form of policing, and, like, international policing for, like, oh, well, there are these shitty things happening on the internet that, like...
Yeah, because, like, the thing is, like... As awful as they are, like, you can't do anything about somebody making, like, a sexist or racist or any of that stuff. Like if somebody makes that, like, a comment about somebody based on their gender or their race or their religion, like, they're a shitty person. They don't deserve to have anything. But, like, the police can't arrest them for that.
Yeah.
And but, like, should they? And, yeah. Like, the, it's but, their like, right it, to be a piece of shit.
Yeah, in cases where people are just, they're threatening violence on other people or other people's family, children, whatever. Like, that's a different case. Like, that is then, that then becomes intent to harm.
Yeah.
And it does need to go someplace else.
It does.
I think because there isn't really anything for this, I think I mentioned it like a long time ago, but one of the my favorite things that I've ever heard of somebody doing, Alana Pierce, who used to work for IGN, she would get like people like sending her DMs of like rape threats and shit like that. And she would like look through their profile, find their parents, and then send screenshots of those messages to their moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there was nothing else she could do about it, but you know, like, especially if these were like, you know, teenagers doing it, like those teenagers were getting in trouble. She removed like names and pictures and everything like that, but she screen capped like responses she had gotten of like some apologies and stuff like that from mothers for like how their sons were behaving.
Yeah.
But yeah, the internet is an awful fucking place because everyone can do whatever they want. But also, it should be a place where people can do whatever they want. It's just people need to learn the difference between an opinion, a fact, and entitlement. Like, it's a fact that a character did a thing. It's an opinion if you don't like that they did that thing. You don't own those characters, though. It doesn't fucking matter what you think they should have done instead.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know, like, learn to tell the... Like, honestly, people making threats like this, like, they obviously have mental issues as well, like...
Probably, yeah.
Like, they're probably not, like, they are not all together themselves. No. Like, if you're putting that sort of hate behind a fictional, what an actor did as a fictional character, like, that's the shit you see in, like, serial killer, like, movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people like that, like, they need to see somebody and probably be on medication. Because that's just not normal behavior.
No, not at all.
But... Yeah, just to... Oh, holy shit. Sorry, this is totally unrelated. It looks like they just found... They casted the person who's going to be playing Batwoman next season.
Oh, yeah?
Her name is Javika Leslie. She's black. So she will be the first, like, person of color to play a Bat character in anything that I can think of. Because, like, I don't count, like, Catwoman, because Halle Berry was Catwoman, but...
Yeah. She was Catwoman. I don't really think you can consider her part of the Bat family.
Well, I mean, Catwoman is part of the Bat family in the comics. That's what I was saying. I don't count that part of it. Plus, that movie didn't have anything to do with Batman. It was also a very bad movie. So, but I just happened to see it on like the sidebar on Twitter from reading those tweets. Her statement was, "I'm extremely proud to be the first black actress to play the iconic role of Batwoman on television." And as a bisexual woman, I am honored to join this groundbreaking show.
I looked up her IMDb. I don't know what any of it is. She was in two episodes of the MacGyver TV series from 2017 and 18.
Oh, I watched that. I wonder.
She was Jesse Colton.
I mean, that means absolutely fucking nothing if she was just in two episodes, but I probably saw her in it.
Yeah.
I never watched Godfriended Me or The Family Business.
Well, that's pretty sweet. I'm still hesitant because it's so weird they're changing the lead character.
They're also just changing the character. They're not just changing the actress.
Yeah.
And making her still Kate Kane.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's weird.
Oh, I agree. It's going to be weird, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to be like, oh, fuck this show. I'm definitely going to watch it, but... I'm just like, I'm gonna have to learn basically all the characters all over again because they all are gonna have to learn her. So it's just gonna be weird for at least the first few episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely will be. But I mean, you know what? Like, that's cool. Like, they didn't just get like another pretty white girl to play Batwoman. So
yeah.
Good for them.
Nice.
And like, honestly, like, at this point, most of the CW heroes, like the main, like, I mean, not even most, like, the main casts of all those are predominantly white people, so.
Yeah, it's the main heroes are, like, the title heroes are primarily white, yes. But that's, it's unfortunate, it's the characters they chose, like, I mean, they could have chosen a Barry Allen and made him African American, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah, but no, that was cool, and you know, a nice little I guess break from what is now the next story. So Evo, the fighting game tournament, it was going to have its online thing instead of the in-person one.
Yeah.
It has been canceled following allegations against their former CEO. So that's something.
Yeah. Sexual misconduct allegations. I don't know. I can't. Oh yeah. Sorry.
So Capcom and NetherRealm both were the first people, like the first companies to pull out. So Capcom and NetherRealm have the two biggest fighting games, I guess you'd say, which Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter.
Yeah.
So those companies pulled their games from the competition after the allegations surfaced online. I'm trying to find the action. Here it is. So this is from IGN. This past week, several Super Smash Brothers esports competitors and members came forward with allegations of abuse from those within the community. Well-known personas were implicated on social media as alleged abusers, with some victims reportedly underage when the abuse occurred. Joey Culler, president of Evo, faced allegations from members of the community that claimed he, who also goes by Mr. Wizard, paid out tokens to local members of an arcade who were underage at the time to jump into a pool in only their underwear. So, like, real creepy dude. From what I was seeing, like, the allegations were, like, 14, 15-year-old girls when he was, like, in his mid-20s. So, like, there's a definite, like, that's fucking creepy and gross and what the fuck is wrong with you level there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, in a statement by Evo, the company announced that the behavior in these accusations runs directly counter to Evo's mission of building a safe, welcoming environment for all our players and attendees. We take this responsibility seriously. Accordingly, Joey has been placed on administrative leave pending a third-party investigation. And then it goes on, Kuehler was only one of many people named in a community-wide scandal that claims widespread sexual misconduct from within the fighting game community. A similar scandal hit the community last year following Evo 2019. And then within days of this sort of breaking, it was just fully canceled because more and more companies pulled out. Nintendo pulled Smash Brothers out, which it seems like a large number of the accusations were coming from the Smash Brothers community.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, I don't know. I've always heard that, like, the people that do, like, competitive Smash, like, that community is kind of toxic, but maybe it's a little more toxic than we even realized.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really follow the competitive fighting game scene, so I don't really have much to say on this besides the fact that this is also disgusting, and it pisses me off as well.
Yeah, so this guy, so some of these accusations were a while ago, obviously, because he is definitely not in his mid-20s anymore. But, like, that doesn't really change that there's a good chance some of these things continued on because the guy is, he's both a co-founder and the CEO of Evo.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in a position of power that would kind of let him do whatever he wanted if people didn't want to get, you know, kicked out.
Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, that's the sort of world that we live in where people in power have that sort of sway.
Yep.
Yeah.
And actually, Drew, one of the games that you're going to talk about later, Them Fight in Herds, actually also had their game pulled from the tournament before it was canceled.
Yeah.
As well as, like, Dragon Ball FighterZ, Soul Calibur 6, Tekken, so, like, all the Bandai Namco games. So, yeah, like, as soon as these things started coming out, companies started pulling their games from it, and Evo eventually released a statement that reads, "Over the past 24 hours, in response to serious allegations recently made public on Twitter, we have made the first of a series of important decisions regarding the future of our company. Effective immediately, Joey Kuehler will no longer be involved with Evo in any capacity. We are currently working towards his complete separation from the company and have relieved him of all of his responsibilities. Going forward, Tony Cannon will act as CEO. In this position, he will take a leadership role in prioritizing greater accountability across Evo, both internally and at our events. Progress doesn't happen overnight or without the bravery of those who speak up against misconduct and injustice. We are shocked and saddened by these events, but we are listening and committed to make every change that will be necessary in making Evo a better model for the stronger, safer culture we all seek. As a result, we will be canceling Evo Online and will work to issue refunds for all players who chose to purchase a badge. We will donate the equivalent of the proceeds as promised, to Project Hope. So at least, like, a good move for Evo.
Yeah.
It does suck that, like, the whole thing is canceled, because Evo is a cool tournament to witness. But yeah, also, when something like this comes up, they're better off canceling it and getting their shit squared away.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. it would... So, having an event like this during the times we're going through right now would be absolutely awesome. But at the same time, I agree that, yeah, it's a good move for them to be like, we're going to step back this year, because we need to figure things out. It's a smart move.
It was already going to be a weird year for Evo, since it was going to be an all-online thing instead of a big in-person tournament like normal.
Yeah.
So, and let's be real, fighting games don't always have the best net code.
Yeah. So, not the strangest decision for them to just go, no, forget it all. We'll reconvene next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is just in a cascade of, kind of like Drew was saying before, like, people in wrestling, people in games, people in Hollywood, like, it's, like, it seems like once a year, like, this stuff all starts coming up, and it's like, why are people still doing this?
Yeah.
Like, you've seen how it works out for other people. Stop being shitty.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, just because you weren't called out last time doesn't mean you won't be called out later.
Mm-hmm.
Because I even saw, like this is going back a few weeks, but, like, you know, people were on there outing former upper management for, like, IGN a couple weeks ago, and for people, like, HR departments at like, GameSpot, so, like, CBS Interactive. I forget what company the guy was with. Who did the Division games?
Ubisoft?
No, like, what studio?
Oh, well...
Was it Massive? No, Massive's an EA studio.
Isn't it just, you know... Well, I guess I saw... At least saw that there was a lot of stuff coming out of Ubisoft Montreal.
It is Massive.
Yeah, oh it is Massive. Okay, cool. Yeah. Hey, look at that. So, the story that I had seen was somebody specifically pointed out... Either they were working at Massive at the time, or they were working at another company, and now this person may work at Massive. But, like, it was, like, an HR director who they wanted, like, they were up for a potential promotion, and the lady it was a female HR director, so, you know, like, this stuff does go both ways, basically tried to blackmail him into sleeping with her for the promotion.
Damn.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ubisoft has had a bunch of stuff come out. One of them, like, it's shitty, but, like, it's also one of those things where, like, it was the guy's personal life. He had an affair. So, he didn't force anybody to do anything. It wasn't somebody underage. It was just a shitty thing to do. And it was the, I guess the director or project lead for, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So, like, he has since stepped down. And that's probably mostly just to get his own shit together, not so much like he hasn't been expunged from the industry the way others have been.
Yeah.
But a bunch of other accusations did come out at Ubisoft, to the point where I know Yves Guillemot issued, like, a statement where they're hiring, like, a third-party firm to come in to do, like, not HR management, but, like, basically oversee, like, them basically changing the practices of how they handle that sort of thing.
Okay.
And they're sending out, like, employee surveys and trying to have ways that employees can either openly talk to management or anonymously talk to management if there is an issue to come in.
Yeah.
But, like, it sucks that it took a bunch of people being accused of things for them to try to make these changes. Like, why not just make the changes, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it's not all bad news this week.
Are you sure?
No, I'm positive. There's at least one good thing on here.
I hope so.
I mean, yeah, you know what? I will say that in two newses from now is a good thing. everything else I'm kind of meh about, but you know.
I don't really know if that's a good thing. But let's go to this news, the next news.
So, Microsoft is one of several parties interested in purchasing WB Interactive from AT&T. Which it's still fucking weird to wrap my head around the fact that AT&T just owns Warner Brothers. Because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
AT&T
so owns a lot.
Yeah, so some of the other companies include Activision, Take-Two, and EA.
Yeah.
Which honestly, out of all of them, I'd kind of prefer Microsoft to get them. Like, it would kind of suck for all of the WB Studio stuff to end up Xbox exclusive, but Activision and EA have habits of just shitting all over studios and then closing them.
Yeah.
And Take-Two just, I mean, honestly, I guess they're fine-ish for the most part. They own a bunch of really big studios, so they kind of just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But yeah, whoever gets this, it would end up with Avalanche Software, not Avalanche that does the Bethesda games, obviously. Monolith Productions, NetherRealm Studios, Rocksteady Studios, TT Games, and like all the various like WB Game Studios.
Yeah.
So like that's a lot of studios that make games. They would not get licensing with them. So like Rocksteady doesn't mean that they would get Batman right. games, or I mean in general, like WB owns all the DC heroes. So they wouldn't get the DC heroes, they wouldn't get Harry Potter.
So they'd get a bunch of studios that can't make the games they're famous for making, except for NetherRealm.
Yep, they get Mortal Kombat. Also, TT Games makes all the LEGO games. I'm sure they'd still be able to make the LEGO games.
Yeah, but not with, like, half the license they've had.
Well, keep in mind, like, they make LEGO games for everything. Like, there's been Marvel LEGO games.
Yeah.
So, like, that's one of those things where I feel like the LEGO games have a certain notoriety to them, where I feel like companies are just going to be like, yes, here's the rights to make a LEGO game, here's our fee. Yeah, because, I mean, they've made, for as competitive as WB and Disney are, like, they've made a bunch of Disney-based LEGO games.
Yeah.
Or Disney-owned property LEGO games, I guess I should say. Just because they don't get the rights to them doesn't mean that they couldn't also negotiate rights.
That is a like a silly thing in my opinion. That like if you're buying the studio that owns the rights, wouldn't you just get the rights with it? Like
no, because well, like
those studios don't own the rights, especially like the WB studios. It's just they're owned by the company that owns the rights to them.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's kind of like how it's you know. Disney used to make their own games. They don't anymore, so that's why, like, Insomniac got to make a Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, EA has had the Star Wars license forever at this point, but, like, you know, the rights holder, in this case AT&T, is going to keep their DC characters, they're going to keep Harry Potter, and they're just going to license them to the studios to work on them.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, Microsoft has money, like, if they're all in for this, like, that's a bunch of studios that make solid games that, even if they didn't make them, Xbox exclusive, even if they went, like, timed exclusive for things like Mortal Kombat, you know, I mean, Minecraft is still multi-platform. They've owned Mojang for, what, like, 5 years now?
Yeah. Yeah, like, and I don't think, I feel like if Microsoft were to do this, you're right, they're not gonna put all of these to just the Xbox. I feel like they'll be smart about it. And they'll know, like, alright, some of these games are big sellers all over the place. Let's just keep them. Let's just make our money.
Yeah, like, they will probably do, if they do it, I could see them doing, limited exclusivity. Where, you know, like, a big AAA game comes out and it's only available on Xbox for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, games like Mortal Kombat, it wouldn't make sense to do that. Like, put that on and everything and make as much money as you can up front.
Yeah, because people are just going to buy those games. Like, doesn't matter what console it's on. But I also don't think games like Mortal Kombat are console sellers. So,
Exactly.
Just, like, I'm not going to get an Xbox, whatever the new one is called, because I always forget it. I'm not going to get that for Mortal Kombat. And I don't think, really, a lot of people would. They would just get a different fighting game.
No, exactly. Like that's kind of what I meant. It's not a console seller, so it's not worth holding on to that for any length of time.
Yeah.
Whereas you put it out and you just let it go everywhere, and people will buy it as they buy it. Because you know, Mortal Kombat's one of those games where people buy it when it comes out. People buy it 3 years later. Like they're gonna make money off of it over an extended period of time. Especially because fighting games always have like the fighter passes and the DLC and everything.
Yeah.
Where they would bring in a whole bunch of money with, you know, a multi-platform game like that.
Yeah.
But, like, they could totally get away if they could work the, like, the DC character deal and go exclusive with, you know, a Batman game or something like that. Look, if a studio like Rocksteady did a DC game, which, I mean, the rumor is they're making the Suicide Squad game.
Yeah.
If it's a good game, it will sell consoles.
Yeah.
Like, look at Spider-Man on PS4, exclusive to PS4, sold millions of copies.
Yeah.
So
you just got to get that good game. It's like the last few Batman games weren't that great, so hopefully they can like bring it back.
I mean, only Arkham Knight was the only one that was kind of bloated.
I actually haven't played Arkham Knight, so I just remember so it.
How are you going to talk about that?
I just remember it not having good reception, part because of the PC issues and part because I just remember hearing it wasn't that great.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it was very good. It also has an 87 on Metacritic. Okay. But yeah, the PC launch for that game was a fucking travesty, and yeah, that's a whole different ballpark.
Yeah.
Arkham Knight was just bloated. It had a bunch of like shitty car combat stuff with the Batmobile that no one liked, and in order to get the true ending, there were just too many collectibles.
Okay.
Like, the Riddler stuff in that game wasn't fun, and there were like 200 of them to get, and you had to do all of them to get the true ending.
Okay. That's right.
But like the other three Arkham games, Asylum, City, and Origins were all that, like, they were very good games.
Yeah,
Origins gets shit on a lot.
I loved City. Origins was great. I loved City more. I feel like it goes, like, I feel like Origins is the last place of those three, but probably still better than Arkham Knight.
No, I would put Origins second. Like, I would go, like, City, Origins, and then I would actually go Knight over Asylum. As good as Asylum is, there's a lot of quality of life stuff that came in the later games that make Asylum not as good.
I can see that, but I also, like, I think it's the origin of this game series. Like, it's the first one. I give it a little bit of leeway because they didn't know what they needed to tighten up because it was the first one and it launched the series. So, and I enjoyed it a lot. So I thought
Fast and Furious 1 launched the series. It's not the best Fast and Furious. It's not even in the top five.
I didn't say Arkham Asylum is the best. I'm just saying it's in second place. I said City was the best.
And I'm disagreeing with you.
Well, you're wrong.
You haven't even played all of them.
Well, I don't need to play Arkham Knight to know that Arkham City was the best.
I mean, what if you like Arkham Knight better though?
I don't really know if I will. From what I heard about like the Batmobile stuff, it was just, I'm not really super interested in that one.
I mean, honestly, like, it is actually a very good game. It just had some bloat to it that didn't need to be there.
Yeah.
Anyway, though, the good news I mentioned earlier.
See, when you said two newses from now, I thought you were talking about the next news. But that would have been three newses, so I got confused. This is good news.
Yeah, so Donkey Kong Country is coming to the Nintendo Switch Online this month.
Which is pretty sweet everyone who didn't get an SNES Classic.
I mean, even for people that have the SNES Classic, being able to just play a game like that on like the Switch in handheld mode,
yeah,
it's a good time.
Yeah.
We're also getting Not Too Many Championship Wrestling for the SNES and The Immortal for the NES.
I have no idea what the...
Neither do I. But, no, you know, they're just getting added to the two apps for, you know, I mean, the cost of your subscription, which... Honestly, that subscription is cheap enough that, like, it's worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Donkey Kong Country, I think, is one of the few kind of iconic SNES games that aren't on there yet. Along with, like, Mario RPG and Final Fantasy III, Chrono Trigger, Earthbound, I guess. But even Earthbound, I don't think is that iconic from the SNES. It kind of got more well known after Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Are there any other SNES games? Drew, I don't think you probably haven't really looked at the games listed in there.
I can't say that I have.
But are there any games that either of you can think of that you'd want to see on either of those services or apps, whatever you want to call them?
Not that I can think of. I never had an SNES. I only had a Nintendo, and all the games that I had, except for maybe one or two, are already on there. The one game I'm thinking, I can't even remember if it's an NES game or not, was Tiger Heli.
I've never even heard of that.
I'm pretty sure that's an NES
game. It is an NES game. It was like a top-down like plane game where, like, what are they called?
Like a shoot 'em up?
Yeah, I guess a shoot 'em up. Like Ikaruga and stuff like that, but not as advanced. So I loved that game. I played a ton of it when I was younger. That's the only game I can think of. Everything else that's on there, I believe I owned, and I can't think of much else. I did look up The Immortal, and it's an isometric action-adventure dark fantasy video game.
Sure.
Why
not? That's what that title sounds like it would be.
But it does look kind of neat, but I've never played it before, so who knows?
Yeah. I think as far as, like, games that could go on there go, but, like, there's some Capcom and, like, Konami games that would be cool. Like, I'm drawing a blank if they're already there, but, you know, like, Contras and Castlevanias and Mega Mans. I know some of those are on, like, the classic systems, but they haven't made their way onto either of the online services yet.
Yeah, like, it would be nice to see, like, the Mega Mans, but I doubt that. Same with Contra, like, because isn't Contra Capcom as well?
No, it's Konami.
Konami, yeah.
Castlevania and Contra are Konami, yeah. And then the Mega Man series is Capcom.
So, I would think we're probably a little bit more likely to see Contra and Castlevania than we are to see Mega Man on these services.
Why do you say that?
Konami doesn't really do much, so...
I mean, they literally just put out collections of both of them.
Did they?
They did, yeah.
Oh, well, then we're not getting
Generally, though, you're not wrong. Like, Konami kind of doesn't make video games anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make slot machines.
Exactly. So, like, I figure, and if anything, they'd be willing to just give Nintendo the ability to just put these out for free, because they're not making money off them in general, because they don't do anything with them. But since they just release collections, that's not happening.
Yeah. And, like, that's probably the same reason for the lack of Mega Man games on there.
Yeah, because they did just release the Mega Man collections on Switch also.
And people will always buy the Mega Man collections. Always. I don't know about Contra, and probably Castlevania. I don't really know about Contra, but I know definitely people will always buy, no matter what and how long they have to wait for it, they'll always buy the Mega Man collections. So it's just, it doesn't make sense for them to give them away for free.
No, I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, we don't know the financial details of games that get on there from third parties, because there's almost certainly not zero money changing hands, since Nintendo does make some money off the ability for people to play those games. Like, it is not a free service to get access to those games, so I'd imagine some money changes hands.
Yeah, it's probably just, I imagine it's a very small, like, royalty amount.
Probably. And
for like, a company like Capcom that can sell the Mega Man collection for 20 or 30 bucks, like, that's 20 or 30 bucks versus, you know, pennies.
Yeah.
Like, the only games I can think that I would want on there are games that would never get on there because of licensing stuff.
Like what?
Which are NHL 94, although I was more a Genesis version of that game than SNES, but the SNES has interesting things with the controls on that because of the controller versus the Genesis. Like, the L and R buttons will automatically switch you to last defenseman instead of having to manually switch all the way around.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Also, it doesn't have the weight bug that the Genesis version has, so that the light players can check better than the heavy players. And the NBA Jam game are the other games I would want on there.
Oh, yeah, no, actually, NBA Jam would be cool on there.
Because I played a shit ton of NBA Jam and Tournament Edition on the Super Nintendo back in the day.
I mean, honestly, I think, like, there are enough games that they probably could get on there. Like, the early Final Fantasy games aren't really available on other platforms, like other modern platforms. Like, you can get the old Final Fantasies on, like, Vita, but you can't play them on your PS4 or anything. Same thing, like, Super Mario RPG is kind of an easy one. Like, why the fuck not?
That would be so great if they were to do that, because I never got to play it, so, and I would just love to, because I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, like, or ActRaiser. Put ActRaiser on there, you cowards.
Sure.
Like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know. According to NintendoLife.com, some of the games that we have on the NES system on the Switch and SNES are exclusive just to the Western Hemisphere. Like, The Immortal is a Western exclusive.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like Star Troopers, Clue Land, Shadow of the Ninja, Eliminator Boat Duel. They're all, like, Western exclusives, according to Nintendo Life. I don't really know how true that may actually be. Or on the SNES, we have Super Tennis, Super Punch-Out, Wild Guns, and Natsume Championship Wrestling. They're all Western exclusive.
Interesting.
I believe that, because, I mean, look, even look at the classic consoles. There were different games available depending if they were in Japan or anywhere else.
Yeah.
True.
I'm going through the Japanese exclusives.
Is Ghouls and Ghosts on
Super Ghouls and Ghosts, sis.
Ghosts and Goblins is as well, yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, that would be one that I would want. Oh, shit. Is UN Squadron. That's a fucking awesome, super hard game.
What is it?
I don't...
UN Squadron?
UN Squadron. I don't think so. I don't see it on this list.
There. That is a game that I would absolutely play the shit out of. If it ever got onto that SNES classic, or whatever it's called. Is it? I forget what they're, but onto that service.
It's the SNES, Nintendo Switch Online, and NES Nintendo Switch Online.
Right.
Some of the NES Japanese exclusives: Fire Emblem. three versions of Fire Emblem. Oh no, it's actually just it's one, but it's listed three times for some reason. SP version because it's the original and the SP. And there's two SP versions of Fire Emblem. So.
And that's the Japanese?
That's the version? Japanese exclusive version. What else is there? Famicom Wars, God Slayer, and then, SNES, Japanese exclusive has, Shin Megami Tensei.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, now that we've discussed that, Drew, you played a fighting game.
I did. Oh, excuse me. I played some of them fighting, because I was watching Ben from Giant Bomb had actually joined to play in the Evo tournament that wound up getting canceled, and I was watching some of his training, and I was like, this actually looks pretty darn cool.
And was it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's, My Little Pony inspired game. It apparently actually started life as a My Little Pony fan game, and got taken down, but I believe actually the animator or character designer for My Little Pony Friendship is Magic designed the redesigned characters for this game.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, images just on Google, and this game looks dumb, but, like, in a good way.
Yeah, oh, no, so, like, the character I've kind of settled on playing is a llama, and that character is dumb as fuck. Like, when you... I'm pretty sure it has unique, like, opening animations for if there are player one or player two, because I haven't ever noticed what happens when you're player two, when I've been player one with that character. When you're player two, like, that character is right up in the screen, just with a super dumb-looking face, and then realizes, oh, I have to go fight now, and you watch it run back to, like, the playing area. There's six characters. They definitely have a lot of, like, corollaries to mainstream fighting games. Like, the character I originally tried to play is the one actual pony, the one unicorn, who is basically Ryu. Like, she has a fireball, quarter circle forward, and one of the three attack buttons. If you do the light, medium, or heavy, it goes faster. It's a four-button fighting game, so you have three standard attack buttons, and then a magic attack button, which uses up one of the 2 meters at the bottom. Each character earns the magic meter a little bit differently. And, I don't know, it's pretty, it runs really well, it looks really nice. $10 or whatever on sale, I think normally it's...
What platforms is it on?
It's definitely on PC, which is where I got it, because... like I said, it was on sale. I don't know if it's on anything else at all, actually.
Oh, it's a Humble Bundle published game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, so right now it's Windows, Mac OS, and Linux.
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, Mac OS and Linux are TBA.
But, yeah, if you like, it has a really good tutorial, like, has lots of, here's all the combos. A lot of the combos for the characters are basically the same, so you can... The same inputs, I'll say, but how they play out are way different, so you have to manage the inputs differently, you know?
Yeah. Like,
the short A attack, jumping A attack's not the same, so you have to time it differently for the different... But you can all do... Basically, every character has a combo that's A, B, C, and then down forward C to launch them up in the air, and then jump and A, B, C again.
Okay. It sounds neat. It's just... The only fighting game I like is Smash, so I'm not really...
And that's not a fighting game.
It kind of is. But yeah, so I don't really have much to say about it, unfortunately. It looks dumb, but in a good way. Yeah.
There's also tons of skins for every character, and there's lots of skins where you can go, oh, hey, that's supposed to be this. Like, the one dragon character has, like, a skin that's purple and green and named Spire, or purple, you know, like, it's clearly Spire the Dragon.
Yeah.
Or it has a Bruce Lee-inspired skin. The one sheep character that has little dogs that it can summon has a Adventure Time-themed skin.
Okay.
And, yeah, lots of cool skins. It's nice. I put a few hours into it, got my ass mostly kicked online, because there's some people with hundreds of hours in that game already.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. So, games next gen might be a little more expensive.
Not surprising. No, kind of a long time coming, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, games have been $60 since the 360 PS3 days. Mm-hmm. So, 15-ish years. But NBA 2K21 has revealed its price for the PS5 and Xbox Series X as $69.99. So, you know, that's a thing. It's still going to be $60 if you buy the current gen, but it won't have any upgrades the way a lot of games are launching.
Yeah.
If you buy the $100 Mamba Forever edition, though, it comes with an upgrade to next gen.
Okay.
So for an extra $40, you can get an upgrade that would only cost you an extra $10 if you just waited an extra 2 months to buy it.
But that's the thing. There's going to be those people that aren't going to wait, and they're going to want it right away, and so they're just going to spend the $100, maybe. As long as you can, like, cross save and move your save to the next gen.
I'm sure you'll be able to, and I'm sure there's actually other things that come in that edition anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's digital only or not, but you can assume, like, an art book, a soundtrack, like, all the normal collector's edition things.
Yeah.
But yeah, this does seem like a logical move, you know, 15 years of the same price when games have just become more and more expensive to make.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I don't know if you guys really remember this, but, like, in the 90s, like, cartridge-based games were, like, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Like I put in the notes, like, Chrono Trigger retailed for $80.
Yeah, totally.
And I know there were, I think Earthbound originally retailed for, like, $100, I want to say, but it came with the player's guide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, that was a little bit of a different situation, but still, like, $100 for a game with a book, like, so, going up to 70 doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
No, I mean, it kind of sucks, but at the same time, I agree, like, I'm not surprised. Like, an additional $10 can go a decent way. Not a long way, but a decent way. But, yeah, games, like you said, they're getting bigger, they're getting longer, they're getting more expensive. Well, not necessarily longer. They're getting bigger and more expensive to make that, like, it doesn't surprise me that, like, the price has gone up.
Yeah, I mean, everything else goes up. Like, the cost of movies goes up to go see a movie. Your cable bill goes up. Games just haven't, even though games have gotten exponentially bigger and more elaborate over the last decade and a half.
Like, I'm sure a lot of companies survived on the fact that, yeah, they probably took a loss for the first couple hundred sales, but after that, it, like, eventually made its money back, meeting a certain expectation, like, meeting a certain number of sales. That's just, at this point, probably not really a good, profitable way to run these businesses.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's $10. The thing that's been getting me is, like, seeing people online, like, having little fucking temper tantrums about it. Like, oh, they're going to charge us $10 more, but they're only giving us half a game still. It's like,
well,
they're not giving you half a game. Like, DLC does not make it half a fucking game. You don't have to buy the DLC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
the only game I have purchased story DLC for was Spider-Man. There is not a single other game that I have actually purchased and used story DLC, or any DLC for that matter. I just don't do it.
And maybe, not very likely, but maybe this additional $10 is gonna, like, get them to not do as much DLC and put more into the game itself.
No, there will still be DLC, there will still be microtransactions, but, like, think about it. Like, how many games actually really do, like, single-player DLC anymore? Like, it's not that common.
Yeah, it's really only RPGs that have single-player DLC. Everything else is online.
And even those, like, you don't see it that, it's not that prevalent.
Yeah.
But, like, most of the time, it's, like, microtransactions are 9 times out of 10 cosmetics, and DLC is usually fighting games or, like, online games like Call of Duty and stuff like that, where you're paying for additional maps that they're making over an extended period of time after the game releases.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to wait an extra year for the game to come out so that you can have all the maps at launch, or do you want to pay an extra $20 and get a new map every 3 months?
Like, yeah.
But yeah, I think this is a fine thing for them to do.
So I looked up the Mamba Forever Edition for 2K21, included with the upgrade of Standard Edition on PS5 or Xbox X. You get 100,000 bonus, quote, VC, which I'm assuming is their credit system in the game, and the Zion Williamson Digital Collection.
I don't know what that is.
I mean, there was a ton of stuff with the Mamba Edition. There's, like, card packs for their, whatever they call their version of Ultimate. Like, there's stuff more than upgrade. Oh.
I found 100,000 virtual currency, 10,000 my team points, 10 my team tokens, 60 my career skill bonus or boosts, 30 Gatorade boosts, 40 my team promo packs, 10 at launch and 3 per week, Sapphire, Damian Lillard, and Zion Williamson my team cards, my player shoe collection, my player book backpack, Kobe Bryant digital collection, which includes a bunch of stuff, and then the Damian Lillard thing was a pre-order thing. Or the Zion Williams. I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem worth it to get that edition, but
you also don't play basketball games.
Well, yeah, but it's seemingly all cosmetic stuff and then, like, pay-to-win shit as well.
Yeah, I mean, the My Team mode, like, those modes are incredibly popular. And,
yeah.
Like, the Ultimate Team, collect random player to build your team modes.
Yeah.
It's basically Pokemon for sports teams.
It is.
Yeah, kinda.
Absolutely.
I mean, considering that Pokemon is, like, trading cards for video games.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Real quick on the prices, I found someone had posted an image from a 1994, some ad listing a bunch of SNES games. Shaq Fu, $65.
Nice.
Wow.
That's...
You know, Super Street Fighter 2 on SNES, $70.
That's...
Legend of Gaia, $75. NBA Jam, $60. So, you know, above $60 games were way common for a while.
Yeah, and so I know some of that, there was a quote-unquote chip shortage in the 90s, and also cartridges were just more expensive because fitting data on those things and all the hard plastic that went into them, like, cost money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, those games back then, you know, took a fairly small team, usually, a relatively short amount of time to make, compared to now.
Yeah.
Now you figure, like, the credits for The Last of Us 2 took, like, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad thing, that's just how many fucking people worked on that game.
Yeah.
Game's budget was, like, a Hollywood movie budget. It was, like, $150 million.
Yeah, because you've got the voice actors and actresses, and you've got the mocap that now goes into video games, whereas before it was just, excuse me, all done digitally. It's like there is a literal fuck ton more that goes into video games in 2020, even in the past 10 years than happened in the 90s.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, like, just there's also, you know, because of mocap, there's also stunt coordinators and stunt work and cinematographers and the film crew, and, like, there's so many people that it's not just your artists and your programmers and your, like, overall, like, directors anymore.
Yeah. And it's not like a movie where you release it out in theaters, you pay to see it once, and then if you want to see it again, you pay it. Like, you buy the game, you own it, you never have to pay for it again. So
yeah, but you figure, so if you want to go see a movie in the theater, a 2-hour movie costs average $15 for a ticket. Like, mm-hmm. Like, if you're not going to, like, a matinee or, like, a first showing. That's 2 hours. how many games do you know that are 2 hours? Like AAA games. That...
Not many, if any at all.
Yeah, like you figure, like, The Last of Us was about 30
yeah.
or so, to just, like, beginning to finish, and I don't know, like, if you did the math, I'm not going to do the math, like, 2 hours, $15 for every 2 hours, like, that's a lot more time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a lot more money, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah I think if games got more expensive than $79.99, I think that's where, or I'm sorry, more than $69.99, on like a regular basis, I think that's where you'd have to sort of start looking at it as, if they're $80 games, why do we have to then spend an extra $30 for the additional content?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if I'm spending $80, there better not be a day one update. Like, that's my thing. Like, if you're gonna increase the prices, then make sure it works. Like,
so
fucking Bethesda is, I'm calling you out on this. If your prices are going up by $10, I better not have dragons flying fucking backwards. Like,
so yes, games are going to be broken, especially from Bethesda, but day one patches are not bad. Like, they're a saving grace, because games go gold like 4 to 5 months prior to the release usually. So if a game goes gold and it's today and it's due out in November, that's still 5 months that the team has to work and polish the game. That if they didn't have those 5 months to still be able to make content, and they knew that there were things that they had to fix, that game's just getting delayed 5 more months. Whereas if they know they can fix most of it up in those 5 months and just have a day one patch for it, why the fuck not? Yeah, the day one patches, I'm totally fine with. If they're too big, that's when it becomes a problem. It's like, what the fuck were you guys doing that your day one patch is 100 gigs?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But you know, if it's like a 40 gig patch because they are dumping a whole bunch of like assets into a game, which frankly, next gen, things are going to be smaller too.
Yeah.
And honestly, I kind of forget about day one patches because I've been buying so many things digitally.
Yeah, me too. and also, next gen with all the solid state drives, things are going to be downloading and installing a lot faster too.
No, the downloads are still going to suck. PSN is garbage.
They will install. I highly question the statement that things are going to be smaller in the next gen.
Well,
like, that's just almost impossible. Like, cool, we might have terabyte hard drives in these next systems. They will hold 7 games apiece.
Yeah, but so they're already pushing out 4K content. They're not doing higher resolution than that, at least up front. But the whole thing with the solid state drives is they don't have to duplicate any content in the games. So everything can, like, every asset can just be a single asset, rather than having to have 30 of the same asset so that the game can quickly read it off the hard drive.
Yeah, but, I mean, are a lot of these games currently of, like, 4K assets?
A lot of games have it because they have the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X, like, patches. Look, and just to be clear, I'm not saying that, like, a 100 gig game is suddenly going to be 12 gigs, but I'm just saying, like, they're not, like, when they're patching something, it's not going to have to be a 100 gig patch. Maybe it's half of that.
Well, okay. That, yes. But the games in total, I don't know how many games are going to come in under, like, 90.
I think plenty will come in under 90 gigs. Like, I don't think they're going to, I think, like, their Call of Duties are going to be outrageous because, I mean, look at the current Call of Duty. Like,
yeah.
It's basically filling up terabyte hard drives on its own.
Yeah.
But I think specifically first party stuff is going to be better at it than third party. But yeah, cause like people are already getting 4K content mostly for first party games and it's not filling up their drives. So if there's just less content that they have to download, things are going to be smaller. You know, instead of having 2 1-gig files that are just a tree, they just have one. And that one tree is just everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I guess we will see in, you know, 5 to 6 months.
Yeah.
So.
That's, I mean, 4 months, probably.
I'm figuring, like, 5 to 6 for games to actually be available.
I mean, probably even more than that. Something at launch.
Yeah, but when was the last time a console had a launch that wasn't just all garbage?
All right.
I mean, the PS4 launch was basically, here's a bunch of PS3 games. And knack.
What was that title? It was one of their PS3 games.
Killzone?
Yeah, that's it. They had Killzone, which was pretty good. And Knack was good. I enjoyed it.
Was Knack good?
I mean, it wasn't shitty.
Did you actually play it?
I did. I own it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I bought that and Killzone as my, like, launch titles, quote, launch titles. And I enjoyed Knack. It wasn't a shitty game. It was what I expected it to be, which was more like a childish type game. And it was a platformer and it had some neat concepts with it. And it was, honestly, it was kind of made more as like a demo of what the system could do and less of like an actual full on game. But
Are you going to call Mark Cerny's like pride and joy, his life's work, a tech demo?
Because you
no soul?
That was basically what it was, though. Like, they wanted to show off, like, the, I think, what did they call it? Like, the million point thing or million piece thing or whatever. Because Knack was always made of a bunch of different pieces and he would always, like, look different and whatnot. And it wasn't a horrible game. It was fine and I enjoyed it.
All right. Speaking of things you enjoy, how are you enjoying No Man's Sky?
Yeah, I decided, because I was, after beating Last of Us, I just needed something just dull. Well, not dull, but, like, something to, like, just...
That's a glowing endorsement. I beat a really exciting game, so I had to go play something fucking boring.
No, not dull. I tried to play Birth by Sleep, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep, but I was just like... I don't want to play Kingdom Hearts right now. And so it's like, you know what? I've been seeing a lot of ads for No Man's Sky. I know they've changed it a ton since I last played it. Let me just give it a shot again. And like, it's like a game that you can play. It's kind of mindless, but at the same time, it does make you think, because you have to figure out like what materials you need and shit like that. It's the open world style of games that I tend to sometimes like. And so I deleted my previous save, because that's how you play games like this. Plus, also, my previous save was a survival save, and fuck that shit. And just did a normal playthrough. I didn't do, like, the build mode or anything. It's just their normal mode. And I'm enjoying it. I'm about, like, 11 to 12 hours in, and I've been actually following the story quest line, which they didn't have at launch. That was something that they did release... Like, I think it's, what I'm doing is a little bit more new than what they had when I last played it. And I've been doing like a bunch of the base building. They've changed it up to where before everything was just automatically powered. Now you actually have to power your base. When they initially had it set up, you built like pods for houses or for buildings. And now, you can actually do, like, walls and separate walls and things like that. I'm not that deep into the building, so as soon as I had the chance to just buy the pods and build those, that's what I do. My base has, like, 6 solar generators and 2 batteries just to always stay charged, because that's something you have to think about in this game now, which it wasn't before. I'm trying to think. I have a buggy that I can drive around on my base planet, but I don't have... a freighter yet, because I don't have anywhere near enough credits to buy one, so I can only use the buggy on my base planet. And I just got to this really cool planet that's like all scaly looking and like electronic, and it's supposed to be like where the Sentinels are from, or one of the planets the Sentinels are from. It was really cool looking. Just following the story, it's neat. It's grown a lot from when it was first launched.
Yeah, like I mean, I haven't played it. I remember I played for like 20 minutes when the VR stuff was released for it.
Yeah.
But, like, they did add a ton to it. Like, they're one of those companies where, like, they heard the feedback and they made changes to better the game.
Yeah, and it's, like, all the changes have been free. I don't really know how much the game is right now, but I got it at launch, so I think it was $60. I got it as a birthday gift, too, so I don't really remember. But I like what they did to it, and I like what they have in it. And I honestly, with the story, I kind of feel like I'm still sort of in like a like kind of still in a tutorial for like the entire expanse of the game. And I'm like 12 hours in, and I'm like, this is crazy that like I'm still learning new things 12, 13, 14 hours into the game.
Which, I mean, that's cool. I'm also surprised that you put that much time into it already. But I guess you haven't had work until tomorrow. So.
Yeah, I did the same thing with 7 Days to Die when I started my own personal server for that. I ended up putting, even just playing it on the weekends, I ended up putting 20 plus hours into it, I think. When I get into a game like that, I just end up exploring. The things that drive me nuts though is what they've changed how to upgrade your exosuit, which is your character, and they've changed how to upgrade, or how to find crashed ships and things like that. I'm still using my original ship, and I've had the base amount of inventory space for pretty much this entire time because I haven't been able to find new inventory space to get. Then I found out that, you could buy it at every new space station you go to.
That's actually kind
of
cool.
Yeah, but it's part of the game, at least for the vanilla edition, was going, finding better ships and getting a bigger and better and stronger ship. And I found one new ship in the entire 12 hours that I've been playing, and it wasn't stronger than my ship. It maybe had two additional slots in it, but the amount of work I would have had to do to repair it wouldn't have been worth it. So I decided just not to take it. If I can get 1,000,000 credits, I can upgrade the inventory space on my ship, but that's a lot of money. That's a lot of work to get 1,000,000 credits. But they also added side quests and side missions and even team-based missions that you can do as well, but you can generally solo them. And there's community activities where as long as everyone's working on this, task, if enough people get it done, the whole community gets it done, I guess there's a reward for it. I started looking into that stuff on, Friday or Saturday, and we've been tier 3 pretty much since then, but it takes a long time to upgrade from tier 3 to completion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they added that sort of stuff to it.
Yeah, there's this, they call it an anomaly, and it's basically a space station that no matter what, star system you're in, you can just summon it to appear, and you can go into it, and it's your multiplayer hub. And it's also a place where you have to talk to somebody for, quests, to hand in quests for the main story as well.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool that they kind of...
Yeah, they've expanded...
They did a lot.
They expanded on this game so much. But I've had a few glitches happen that, I had to actually close out the game and reopen in order to fix them. It's kind of frustrating, but it's I doubt that'll ever happen again type of thing. I was talking to a vendor, and somebody, I think, accidentally tried to add me to their party instead of talking to the vendor, and so it closed out the screen from talking to the vendor and opened up the screen to join their party or not, and when I clicked no, it never reloaded the screen for talking to the vendor, and I couldn't escape out of that, so I was just stuck there. If I hit X and moved around, I could feel my controller vibrate as if I was still moving around. So it's just the camera never, fixed itself.
Oh, that sucks.
And then today while I was playing, I was talking to a vendor again, and my controller died. And usually when your controller dies, it opens up the pause menu, tells you to replace your controller. Well, this just was your controller disconnected. But, it was still showing the vendor... I get the new controller, and I couldn't exit out or anything. Luckily, it had just saved, so I didn't lose too much progress. And even the time before, it had saved a few minutes before, so I did, go through some dialogue again, but nothing really major.
Well, that's cool that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, I hope I can get better ships. From what I'm seeing online, there are some really cool-looking ships that you can get in this game.
Nope, you're gonna be stuck with the shitty one.
I'm probably gonna stop playing in a few weeks when Paper Mario comes out.
And I was gonna say you're gonna Paper Mario, aren't you?
Yeah. So once that comes out, which is what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, I want to say it's the 14th or the 17th or something like that.
I'm not sure, but
maybe later than that.
Once that comes out, I'll probably buy that and stop playing No Man's Sky because then I'll get into other things. Plus, Monster Hunter has Outreon coming out within a week or two. So I might try to get back into that and, freshen up my skills so that I can play that, too.
That sounds like a waste of time. Don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, may kind of be.
So have you been keeping up with Stargirl?
I honestly forgot that was a thing until I saw it on here. I totally forgot.
Sorry, I keep forgetting that and S.H.I.E.L.D. are out until, like, two or three episodes build up sometimes, and I look at, like, we don't have, nothing else is on right now, so we're not watching anything off of, like, the DVR, so I just don't look at the DVR on the YouTube app.
Yeah.
But so I'm mostly recent with Stargirl. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's an entertaining show. It got renewed for a second season.
That's pretty sweet.
But it's only going to be on CW next season.
Why have they not moved Titans and everything else to something else? Like, I know. Not in the US, Titans is on Netflix.
Yeah.
But, like, at this point, Doom Patrol is on HBO Max, and they just started airing the new stuff on Max. Like, it was available first, like, season 2 was available first on DC Universe, and then now it's being released on HBO Max.
Oh, I thought season 2 was airing simultaneously on both.
I thought season 2 had been airing for a while. Like, it.
No.
Oh, then I guess it is airing on both, simultaneously. But it's like, it doesn't make sense why they're still kind of trying to push this when, like, if you go on to HBO Max, I can look at it now and just tell you all of the friggin' DC shit that's on there. And, like, I have no reason to get DC Universe. Cause you know what? Titan season 1? That's fine. I can just leave it ended like that. And I won't feel like I'm missing something.
Wait, did you watch all of season 1?
Yes. Look, I know I am missing stuff because season 1 ended with Robin entranced. But, like, you know what? That's just how it ends. I'm not going to force myself to go watch to get DC Universe to watch season 2. Like, it's not worth it. But, like,
it's weird because, like, all their original stuff has been pretty well received. The only thing that kind of, like, fell apart was Swamp Thing, but people liked it. They just canceled it. But you figure, people like Titans, people like Doom Patrol. The Harley Quinn show is super popular. Stargirl was good enough to get a second season with CW. It just makes sense. Like, at some point, they're just going to kill this service and move everything to HBO Max. Like,
yeah.
They're already kind of, like, on the way there when there's only two shows left that are exclusive to them, Titans and Harley Quinn.
Yeah. I think they're trying to milk it for all it's worth. And, like, maybe when Titans season 3 comes out, they'll just be like, all right, here, it's all on HBO Max now.
Yeah, especially when you look at HBO Max and they have a DC category.
Yeah. I was just looking through there, and it's got all the classic DC films and cartoons. It's even got, like, the original Supergirl series and things like that. Like, it's got a ton of shit on there. Like, it makes no sense for them to hold out.
Nope. But they're the same company. Like, HBO is owned by Time Warner, by AT&T.
Yeah.
I believe it's AT&T, at least.
Based on what we talked about earlier, it would have to be.
I am 90% sure they are. I'm just double-checking. Come on, Wikipedia. Be better. God damn it. Homebox. Yeah, Warner Media Entertainment.
Yeah.
I was, like, 90% sure that was the case, but I just wanted to double check. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool that Stargirl got renewed, and, I mean, it's another show to fill in the gap where, like, where Arrow would have been.
Yeah.
So, that's something also.
Yeah, but it's an off-season show, isn't it?
I mean, we don't know that, because nothing coming back till January, so.
True.
This season will end, and they might pick it up as a regular season show come January.
Yeah, true.
So, I think this is the last bit of news, actually. So, Amazon Studios is working on a Fallout TV series. It's being produced by Westworld creators Jonathan Nolan, brother of Christopher Nolan, and Lisa Joy, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I can dig it. I wonder what they're gonna do. There's so much lore in the Fallout universe that I hope they find a way to keep it canon but not fuck anything up. Like, I don't want them to create just, here's Fallout and it's their own fucking thing. I want it to be in the Fallout world, but, like, maybe a different vault that we haven't heard of or been to before that, like, no games have ever, like, really been a part of, but it is something in the actual lore of the world.
Yeah, and I think because though, as far as I know, those games take place over, like, different spans of, like, over 100 years, right? Like, outside of the fact that, like, everyone's in, like, hibernation, but, like, aren't there, like, 100-year gaps between the games themselves?
I believe Fallout 1 and 2 take place back-to-back. You're playing as the same character. Fallout 3, I believe, is 56 years post-Fallout 2, and Fallout 4 is 20 or 30 years after Fallout 3.
Okay. I thought there were bigger gaps in them.
But they take place all over the place. Like,
yeah, they're different parts of the country, yeah. Obviously at different times, even if they are 20 to 30 years apart.
Like, I can't remember I don't know where Fallout 1 and 2 took place in across the United States, but Fallout 3
I want to say they're California.
Okay, that would make sense. Fallout,
I think they actually take place across more than one state in the originals. Because they're not first person, they're like top down, like...
Yeah, they're like Baldur's Gate style. Type games.
Yeah.
But then Fallout 3 was in Maryland and D.C. Fallout
and then 4 is Boston, right?
Was, yeah, correct. The Boston area. It was the Commonwealth. The Boston area. 76 is Virginia.
West Virginia.
And New Vegas is Vegas, obviously. I believe.
Yeah, it's Las Vegas and I guess maybe like... A little bit of California.
But I also don't necessarily know if New Vegas is canon. I can't remember.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
I think
sure.
All of it's canon.
Because New Vegas was like, I don't think it was made from the primary studio that makes them.
No, it was Obsidian.
No. Correct.
And I know it's the only, is it the only one? Yeah, I think it's the only one where you're not a Vault Dweller from the beginning. So I'm not 100% sure about it, though. People thought it was a sequel to Fallout 3, but it was just using the Fallout 3 engine in a new story.
I mean, yeah, in fairness, Fallout 3 isn't 3, 4, and 76 weren't made by the people who made Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But, like, Bethesda owned the rights, and Bethesda basically subcontracted Obsidian to make New Vegas, so...
Yeah.
It is still part of continuity. But, yeah, as far as, like a TV series, like, I don't like those games, but I think the lore is interesting. And, like, they could honestly do it like an anthology, considering, like, there were vaults all over the country. Mm-hmm. People wake up at different times from these vaults. Like,
yeah,
they could do seasons where, like, you follow one group of people in season one, you follow a different group of people in season two. Like,
yeah.
Anthology shows are super popular right now.
Yeah, it would be, as long as... They don't try to pull, like, an American Horror Story where they keep the same cast. Like, yeah, if they definitely just each season is, like, a new set of vault dwellers or something, or, like, maybe just a settlement where there's a bunch of vaults around it. But the vaults are kind of, like, experiments, so you can't dig too deep into it, and you have to be sure that the numbers you're using are not one of the numbers that have already been past experiments.
I mean, yes, but, you know, it's not hard to figure that stuff out, especially when you're Amazon and have all the money in the world. And Bethesda is involved with it, too, because it's their property.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it could actually be pretty cool. Whether it is or not, who fucking knows? But it's got potential. Like, it's at least an interesting world to explore.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and quick on the lore and the dates in the games. So... Fallout 1 is in 2161. Fallout 2 is 80 years after Fallout 1.
I could have swore they were back to back. Or I maybe you're playing as like a relative of the person from the first one.
You are a descendant of the Vault Dweller.
Okay.
But it 80 years after the original Fallout. Fallout 3 takes place 30 years after Fallout 2, which and it's now 200 years after the nuclear war.
Yeah.
Fallout 4 is 10 years after Fallout.
Okay.
I thought it was a bigger gap, because isn't there like...
There is a character in Fallout 4 that is a lot older than 10 years older than Fallout 3.
Well, like, I mean...
The character was a kid in Fallout 3.
That's what I was thinking of.
And I think he's an older gentleman in Fallout 4.
Yeah, like, I don't know much about the Fallout stuff, but I remember that particular thing. Oh, someone's typing.
No, I'm scrolling through wikis to try to figure this out, too.
I mean, I don't know if the character you're thinking about is the son of the main character in Fallout 4.
So I only kind of know this. There's a character that you meet in Fallout 3 that's like a child, and it's like in an area that's like run by children, and then you meet him... as your player in 4 as a, like, adult. Maybe even, like an elderly person.
McCready, I believe. I'm trying to figure this out. It's gonna drive me nuts now.
I don't know. That's not all that important, and Dead Air is silly.
Yeah, fair.
Drew, as weird as this fucking is, you watched an anime on purpose this week?
I sure did.
So I don't know how to pronounce this.
I believe it is Doro Hidoro.
Okay, that makes sense.
It gets said once in the entire series, I think.
Nice.
If it even did, I don't remember. The pronunciation might have just been me looking it up. But yeah, season one, like it is relatively new. It's this year. I don't remember exactly when it came out. But it's on Netflix. It's pretty interesting.
So how did you end up watching a fucking anime?
Someone in a group I'm in mentioned it, and I was like, I don't know. I've got nothing better to be watching right now.
All right.
Sports haven't restarted now.
We have tried to give you recommendations for cool. shit for right. years.
My Hero Academia sounds like I do not care for the concept. And
how about Stranger Things? That's not even an anime. You never watched that, did you?
No.
And that deal is still ongoing. If you watch for every episode of Stranger Things you watch is an additional hour of wrestling I will watch.
20 minutes an episode is way more of an easy... 20 minutes an episode for 12 episodes is way more of an easy thing for me to go, okay, sure. Like, so, 4 hours of time is not as much of a commitment.
So, what is this show even about? Like, I've actually never heard of it.
Okay, so... And it jumps right into it. The main character, Kaiman, is a human that has had a sorcerer cast a spell on him that turned his head into a lizard head.
Okay.
And he is trying to find that sorcerer to kill that sorcerer to get his human head back.
Okay.
Is what the plot of the series is. So there's been, like, an apocalypse, and all the sorcerers have moved into a separate world from Earth that they can jump back and forth using magical doors that they can create. But the humans, like, they can't just access the sorcerer world easily.
God, anime is fucking weird.
Yeah. So, like, literally, the very first scene of the show is some sorcerers have come into the world. Kaiman has found them and fucking murders the shit out of one of them. Like, literally rips them to shreds. The other one, like, is about to get killed by his friend who, she runs, a restaurant that he likes to go eat at. Nikado is her name. And as she's about to kill the other sorcerer, as Kaiman's killing the one, the sorcerer that Kaiman's killing casts the magical door under the other guy to save him. So then that character winds up kind of being sort of the main antagonist, but he's a real shitty sorcerer. And
like, he's bad at it?
Yeah. Okay. So all the sorcerers, like, they have different levels of power, and he's a very weak sorcerer. They all have a black smoke, they admit, and some just have more of it than others. And so that character has very little of the smoke, and he's constantly trying to avenge his friend's death.
Okay.
I guess the true main antagonist is the character Mr. N, who that character's other sorcerer starts working for. And, you know, it's just Kaiman trying to find out who the sorcerer is that cast the spell on him to turn him into a lizard head, and figure that all out.
Does it get wrapped up in one season, or is it left open for more?
Nope. It definitely ends on there is going to be more of this.
Okay.
I mean, by the end, you have found out quite a lot about all the characters, but there is definitely not a full resolution to the story.
It's got an interesting art style, too. Kind of dark looking, like, and very, like, kind of, like, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, it's the full post-apocalypse setting. Although, so the sorcerer's world, way more colorful. The hole where the humans live is basically all gray and black, really. And browns, like, very dark, muted colors.
Yeah. It looks really neat. Looks pretty cool.
It's also really fucking funny. There's one female sorcerer that is just constant comic relief. Often just in the background of scenes, you'll just see her doing something really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
There's two guys working for Mr. N that are constantly sent to try to kill Kaiman. It's a man and a woman. The woman's a big, powerful fighter who has huge boobs. And at one point, there's a scene where they have to get dressed up to go meet a super high special sorcerer. And Mr. N takes all of his family, which are those two, the one guy, and the other small female sorcerer, to get outfits made for this big party. The tailor is measuring the characters and, like, first measures the small girl, you hear her bust size, and then measures the bigger girl and way bigger, and you see the little girl get real, like, what? How are they so big? And then you see she goes and talks to the tailor, and you don't hear what she says. But then, as they reveal all their fancy outfits, she all of a sudden has huge fake boobs. Yeah. Yeah, it's that kind of an anime.
Yeah.
That's basically all anime.
Yes, that's true. But, like, that's kind of... And then there's a scene later in that episode where her fake boobs have fallen out, and there's a conversation going on between two other characters, but she's, like, scrambling around the room trying to find the fake boob for her dress.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, anime is a thing. You might actually, like... I mean, if you enjoyed, like, sort of the post-apocalyptic sort of weird world deal, not so much the people murdering each other, you might like the show Dr. Stone, because it's just a weird post-apocalyptic world.
I mean, the incredibly gory murder parts were pretty damn amusing show.
I mean, that's fair.
You'd probably like Attack on Titan as well. Like, that it's a great anime, but it's a little too much for me. But if you love, like, the gory stuff and, like, the like, pseudo-apocalyptic style, like, you'd probably like Attack on Titan.
So I think the thing that really hooked me into this is the mix of ultra-violence and humor.
Okay. I don't think there's a lot of those.
Because that's the thing. Like, while it starts off, like, literally the one guy getting just stabbed and cut up into a ton of pieces, like, the very next scene is, like, a super comedy. Like... Mm-hmm. And it blends a lot of that really well. So that's kind of what it was like. Oh, all right. Yeah, no, I'm in.
Nice.
All right, then. I might have to check that out, because I had never even heard of it. When I first saw the name, I thought it was... there was a show on Amazon, like an anime, that I want to say it came out, like, last year. It had, like, a bunch of D's in it, if I remember correctly. And it was about... It was, like, a feudal Japan era thing where... Like, a kid was, like, sacrificed by his family to demons and, like, had all of his organs removed or something like that and was found by, like, a wandering samurai, and he was now just trying to find all of his organs that were harvested by demons or something. It's apparently also very violent.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but it definitely started with a D, and I know it was, like, an Amazon Prime exclusive.
Cool. Yeah. Interesting.
But so... Next up is we're going to talk about Last of Us Part 2 in detail.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, Drew, you said you're going to stick around for it?
Yeah, because I may have questions. We'll see.
Okay, cool. So if you haven't played The Last of Us 2, or if you don't want spoilers or any of that stuff, stop listening now. You can go find more of our episodes over at onequest.com. That said, though, if you don't stop listening now, you're going to be spoiled.
Yeah.
At least a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of it. So we both finished it. I just finished it this past Monday.
I beat it last week. Yeah. Early last week.
It was quite a game.
Oh yeah. It is a great game. Very heavy, narrative wise, very intense, but it is a great game and I absolutely enjoyed it.
Yeah, so we talked about like the sort of the opening hours of the game a couple weeks ago. You know, the game, the one thing we did beat around was the game opens up and within the first 2 hours, your main character from The Last of Us 1, Joel, is murdered with a golf club to the brain.
Yeah.
Very viciously, and with Ellie kind of pinned to the floor watching.
Yeah. And what they did, which was crazy, was they had you actually play as the character who ends up killing Joel. Her name is Abby. She is one of the main characters of this game. Also, she's the one who was voiced by Laura Bailey from when we discussed earlier.
This is actually the scene that all of those messages to both Neil Druckmann and Laura Bailey were about.
Yeah, and it's just going into that conversation we had earlier. It's just like it's a fake person. Like it's a computer character. You don't have to send death threats over this. But I understand you had an emotional connection with this character from the previous game, and it was a hard scene to watch because not only does he get just killed with a golf club, he gets tortured. He gets a shotgun to the knee, and you see the bottom part of his leg just dangling there. Like, it is bad what they do to him.
Yeah, I think what kind of builds it all up worse is, like you said, you play as Abby. So yeah. In the beginning of the game, you switch off between Ellie and Abby a couple of times.
Yeah.
At one point, when you're playing as Abby, you're basically running from a horde of the zombie monster things, whatever you want to call them, and you find Joel and Tommy, who are out on patrol.
Yeah.
They save you, you guys escape together, you go back to the place where all of Abby's people are, and they knock Tommy out, and then proceed to torture and eventually murder Joel.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that, Joel doesn't get murdered all the way until Ellie finds them.
Yeah.
Ellie had also been on patrol at that time, and they were supposed to, her and Dina, who she was patrolling with, and Joel and Tommy were supposed to, rendezvous at a certain point.
Well, it was Joel and Jesse were supposed to rendezvous.
No, Joel was with Tommy.
Joel and Tommy were supposed to rendezvous with Jesse.
Right, right.
And
there you go.
They never showed up, so that's when they went searching for Joel and Tommy. It's crazy because Joel saves Abby, and then they work together to get away from the cephaloids or whatever they're called, and then it's just this shit happens, and this game doesn't hold back, and then you move forward, you go past his funeral and all of that, and Ellie is just like, all right, I gotta go find these people, and I gotta go kill them, I gotta get revenge.
Yeah. Yeah, so the game's kind of broken up into three main parts plus that prologue.
Yeah.
So once you get past that prologue, it's 3 days of Ellie, 3 days of Abby, and then kind of a back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah.
So once kind of everything settles, Ellie goes on her quest to go get revenge, which is, they set that up in the original trailers and everything. When they originally showed Ellie for the first time in a trailer, it was her telling Joel that she was going to go kill them all.
Yeah.
We now know that was misleading, but
yeah, it was originally, we all thought somebody killed her girlfriend and tortured her girlfriend or whatever. Now we found out, she's going after the people that killed Joel. And you don't get told why they kill Joel until more than halfway through the game.
Yeah. It's it's late day two, I want to say,
but
right.
Yeah,
for Ellie?
Probably. But at the same time, you can kind of just basically figure out why from context. If you didn't know that was why before you were done Ellie's story, then you're so dense, you don't pick up anything.
Yeah, the only thing that I wasn't 100% sure on until they, confirmed it during one of the flashbacks was that Abby... dad was the doctor that Joel killed when he was rescuing Ellie. He was the surgeon that was going to dissect her brain.
Yeah, so Abby is part of the Washington Liberation, WLF.
Washington Liberation Front.
Front, okay. I couldn't remember the F.
They were wolves.
Yeah, they go by the wolves. But she was originally a firefly in Salt Lake City when... they had Ellie, and Joel went on his shooting spree to save Ellie from dying. And so these people went to were on a quest to find Joel and basically kill him.
Yeah, and they were people that were all ex-Fireflies from Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So just to kind of break this up so it's a little more manageable and we don't have to go through every beat, what did you think of Ellie's story? Like her first 3 days of looking for Abby?
So I felt for Ellie, and like I understood I didn't understand what she was going through, but I connected with her because I played as Joel in the first one, same as everyone else, and it's like, all right, we got to get revenge for this person for him, and like you see the really cool thing is like you see how she like starts to go deeper and deeper and deeper into darkness until the end of day three, where she realizes, oh, this is all wrong. And which is, she ends up killing three of the people that went after Joel.
Is it three or four? No, because I guess some of them died on their own.
Yeah.
Because she didn't kill, she only killed Nora technically by jumping into the spore infested with her.
She ended up killing Nora. She tortured her to get the information before she ended up killing her.
But she would have died either way.
Yeah. But it was.
And then, yeah.
Nora,
and
then
Owen and Mel.
Owen and Mel.
And Alice.
And Alice. And I felt so bad killing dogs in this game. That's the only part I felt really bad about, was killing dogs. Like, I didn't want to do it.
Alice and Bear were the two that I felt the most bad about, but it was after the fact because of the way that you actually interact with them when you play as Abby. Only to find out that, like, oh, yeah, no, like, those were two of the... Because they basically tell you where those two dogs are in Abby's story. So you're like, oh, no, like, that dog was there. Like, I had to kill that dog because it was going to kill me.
Yeah.
And, like, the Alice part you couldn't not do. Like, that was required.
Like, I liked her story, and I liked how, like, even though she got darker and darker, we're talking about Ellie again, like, she eventually came back to the light. I don't like what they did afterwards, when it comes to Ellie, at least.
So, I think it makes sense. Let's not go all the way there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel the same way. Like, I like that her story was a story of revenge, and it was just her going deeper and deeper into just that place. To the point where her girlfriend, she was dying. Like, she was not doing well.
She
was incredibly sick and pregnant, and like Jesse, who was with her, was like, yeah, no, like we need to leave. Like, we have to get out of here.
Yeah.
And instead when they had a clear, like, kind of run. So the only thing that held them back at that point was they wanted to go find Tommy, because Tommy had left to come do this that Ellie didn't have to.
And to be serious, that was their original goal. Like, yeah, Ellie wanted revenge, but their goal, they were sent out from the leader of Jackson to find Tommy and bring him back.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily to go kill these people.
Yeah, but that scene, I guess it was in day three, where, like, you and Jesse are out looking for Tommy.
Yeah.
And Jesse's like, Tommy's probably right there where all that destruction is.
Yeah.
And Ellie's like, no, we just need to go to the aquarium, because that's where Abby is, and that's where Tommy's going. And
Tommy will be there.
And like that's that point where, like, she no longer cares about anything but revenge, and you're just like, God damn it, Ellie.
And it, like,
what the fuck?
Like, this game made me, like, not really like her, but then you end the 3 days in Seattle and get through everything, and you're like, okay, you start to like her, but then there's other stuff afterwards where I have a problem with the narrative, at least. But then you have Abby's story, which takes place in the same 3 day span.
Hang on, I wasn't done with Ellie's part yet.
Mm-hmm.
I also really liked all of the flashbacks that they did for Ellie's part.
Yeah,
showing like these gaps between the end of the first game and this game, where her and Joel were interacting, and like they weren't all, or there was actually the one with her and Tommy too, where like Tommy was basically trying to like talk to her about Joel.
Yeah.
And like it was just like that whole thing where you go to the museum, like that was just a super endearing scene of like showing like that those two really cared about each other.
Yeah, it showed their relationship over the past 4 years. that they weren't going to be able to build up any other way, unless they just made you play through it, which would have been kind of boring, because nothing happened in their lives over 4 years.
Yeah, and, like, at I think the last flashback during Ellie's, like, 3 days was her going to Salt Lake again.
Yeah.
And going to the hospital and finding that everyone was dead.
Yeah, and finding out, and, like, basically what Joel did.
Yeah, she basically tells Joel, it's either tell me the truth right now, and I will go back to Jackson, but I will never speak to you again, or lie to me, and I'm gone. You will never see me again.
Yeah. And so, like, at the beginning of the game, you get a sense that there is some tension between Joel and Ellie. And so, like, it fills in that void, like, okay, she found out what he did, and basically took away purpose for her life.
Yeah, and, like, you honestly don't know if they've really spoken. Like, once you see that scene,
yeah,
it kind of puts you in this space. It's like, have they really spoken since then? Like, yeah. How long ago was this?
I think it was 6 months prior to the game.
Yeah, and, one of the one thing I was watching today, Druckmann actually said that, like the intent was, like, their first conversation since that time was that last conversation you see at the end of the game on the porch.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, literally, like, there was 6 months or so where, like, she did not speak to this man that cared about her and that she cared about, and right when she was ready to try and, like, make amends, he was killed.
Yeah.
In front of her.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, Ellie, it's both of these stories. It's like Ellie's story is the story of revenge, and then Abby's story is a story of
growth,
looking for redemption.
Yeah, growth and redemption. Like, Abby did this horrible thing by killing in cold blood Joel, like, to get revenge, but, like, it wasn't, I think the way they made it out to seem, it wasn't the way they wanted to do it.
Yeah, because it seemed like they were actually planning on going all the way into Jackson.
Yeah. Well, they were going after Tommy. They weren't going after Joel. They knew Tommy was there, so they were going
right. He was an ex Firefly, and they knew that he was Joel's brother.
Yeah, and so they were going to get information from Tommy about Joel, and they ended up finding Joel at the same time. But yeah, Abby really grew. She started off in this, like, the hardened soldier that you see her, and she ends up, like, realizing the wolves aren't good. The wolves suck. And realizing that, like, this, the world that they currently live in is, like, really fucked up, and they just need to get out of Seattle.
Yeah, I think that the shitty part for, like, Abby, like, the wolves weren't all bad. It was really just Isaac. Like, Isaac was leading them into the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Cause, like, you meet a bunch of the wolves, like, as you're playing as her, and, like, they're all just normal people trying to live in this fucking world. Like, they're not actually being all that evil.
Yeah, but they're being led by someone evil, and they're just mindlessly following him, because what else are you gonna do? If you try to leave, they're gonna kill you. If you desert, they're gonna kill you. And there's also this other faction known as the Seraphites that are religious fanatics of a new religion that are going to kill you if you try to join them, because they know you're a wolf. Like, it's a horrible situation to be stuck in.
Yeah, and it's just the way that they did the story, where, like, you play these 3 days in Seattle as Ellie, and then you play those same 3 days from Abby's side, where their paths never cross. Like, day two, day two, Ellie ends up at the hospital. But, like, an hour prior to that, fucking Abby was there.
Yeah.
Basically going through the same hallways that Ellie ends up having to go through.
Yeah.
Which is one of those things, like, when I got there as Abby and I'm, like, walking around, like, talking to people before they, like, pseudo-arrest her, I'm just like, oh, fuck, this is literally the place where I was earlier.
Yeah.
Like, I killed all these people, like, 3 hours ago.
Yeah. Which ends up being, like, 12 hours later or 8 hours later.
Yeah, like, it's all in the same day.
Yeah.
And it all just, it leads you back to that point where Abby and Ellie confront each other at the end of day three.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, at the beginning of Abby's story, it's like, oh, I don't really care what she does. Like, she was kind of a heartless bitch at the beginning. But then by the end of it, you're just like, I mean, she sucks in a lot of ways, but she's not evil.
Yeah, like you understand why she did what she did.
You almost feel worse for her than you do for Ellie by the end.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all of the bad choices that Ellie makes in this, in the, in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, Abby grows on you as a, like, not a good character, but as a, in this sense, a better character than Ellie throughout this story.
Yeah, like, she does lose everything by the end of this game. Like, everybody that she has known since she was young and that, like, she cared about is either killed by Seraphites off, kind of, all, or Tommy potentially off screen, or killed by Ellie.
Yeah.
And, like, literally, like, so the guy that she has been in love with since she was, like, 14, who is with somebody else at the time, and that woman's pregnant, like, Ellie killed both of them.
Yeah.
Like, to be fair, like, she didn't intentionally kill those two.
No. And
but if, still, like, she killed them and left them there, and then, like, Abby gets back to that after. So that whole thing happens after, basically, everybody in Seattle wants her dead.
Yeah.
So, like, she literally has nothing at that point. And that's when, like, when you see her in Ellie's side at the theater with the gun, you don't realize just how desperate she is until, like, you play through her side and realize, like, she really has lost everything.
Yeah.
And frankly, because of Ellie, a whole bunch of nice people are dead. Like, fucking Jesse.
Yeah. Like, Jesse died because of all this. Ellie killed a pregnant woman and, Owen. Like, Mel and Owen both died when they shouldn't have, but also at the same time, maybe Owen shouldn't have reacted the way he did, but it's just, like, it's all a rough situation in general.
And it's the world that they live in, too, where, like, everyone reacts with violence. But, like, I mean, actually, this one wasn't Ellie's fault, but, like, that dude Manny died. He seemed like a real okay guy. Like, they killed all the people that actually seemed like good people.
Yeah.
Which I guess just tells you that, like, you know, when the world goes to shit, only the shitty people survive.
Yeah. So what did you think of the fight between Abby and Ellie at the theater?
In the theater?
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. I actually like that they had you play as Abby.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I feel like Ellie was the more visceral character at that point. Because of everything she had done over those 3 days to try and find Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And because as far as she knew, Jesse and Tommy were both dead at that moment, like, in front of her.
Yeah.
Because, like, frankly, like, Tommy got shot in the face. Like, he should have been dead. I don't know how he survived that.
Was he shot or was he hit with an arrow?
No, he was shot.
Like, later on, he's missing an eye. And so it shot, like, it didn't hit his brain, it just blew out his eye.
Yeah, it was basically the same thing that happened to Carl in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
No, it was Dina's the one that got hit with the arrow in the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like, I thought that was a really interesting fight, and the fact that it was very much a stealth fight. Like, the entire thing of that fight was you had to sneak up on Ellie. Because you had no weapons and she had weapons.
Personally, for me, I hated it.
Really?
I did not like a lot of the combat in this game, especially the gunplay. This game is not good about gunplay.
Oh, yeah, no, the guns aren't fun, but I liked the stealth. So this being kind of a sneak around, throw a bottle sort of fight, I actually didn't mind.
I had so many instances where, like, I was sneaking up on Ellie, and then she just turned around and got me. Even though I was, like, sneaking and quiet. Like, I died so many times in this fight that it took me out. Like, I was over it at this point.
See, I died a bunch early on because I couldn't figure. I was not getting close enough to get the strike prompt. So I kept like getting up to her and like going, well, I can't do anything. Can I just punch her? And like just trying to attack. And every time she would just turn around and like slit my throat with a fucking machete. I'm just like, fuck am I supposed to do?
That was my problem because the way I played Abby, because of the abilities she had, I didn't do a lot of sneaking. I did a lot of strike kills and strikes because
I did sneaking with everybody.
Like I did sneaking, but I did a lot more hand to hand combat and less like covert sneaking and more just run up, beat them down, strike them, and then strike the next person right next to them because of her abilities and stuff. Like she's a lot stronger and brawler of a character than Ellie. That like I ended up not sneaking as much with her. So when I got into that part and I was being forced to sneak, and when I would, I ended up like, I would be just too far off to get the strike, or I wouldn't understand that I needed a strike. And like, the fact that it was a one hit kill, if you tried to hit her and you couldn't dodge out of the way, kind of just took me out of it. And then when you're in the basement and she's setting up the mines, there were multiple times where I would throw a bottle into the mine, stagger Ellie, run up to her, and by the time I got to her, she was unstaggered and would kill me in one hit. Or would shoot.
Oh, see, I wasn't letting her set the mines. I was throwing bottles at her face immediately.
Well, like, when she starts to set the mine, I would wait. Once the mine was set, throw the bottle, and it would blow the mine up, and it would cause her to be stunned. But by the time I got to her, because of the whole stealth aspect of it, I was far enough away. By the time I got to her, like, I just didn't like the fight, and it ended up taking me out of the game. Like,
yeah, no, I can understand that. Like, especially if you were playing, if you played Abby differently the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, I was playing stealth with her just like I played with Abby, or with Ellie, so yeah. I was creeping around. I was creeping very close, and as soon as I had a clear shot, I was just throwing the bottle at Ellie to stagger her, and then just immediately hitting the run button to just dash at her and strike her.
Like, Abby ended up having a lot more ammo, and a lot more just better weapons in general. That, like, I ended up getting into the firefights more, and they were a little bit more smooth with Abby, but still not good.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I'm very bad at the already bad gunplay in those games, so I tried to avoid gunfights where I could.
Yeah, that was how I, like, the gunplay is not great, but, like, it picks it back up for, in my opinion, with the narrative and the stealth play.
Yeah, and honestly, the playing as Ellie with the bow and arrow is probably my favorite way to attack, because you have that control over the arrow where, like, you can pull it back taut, and as long as you hit somebody in, like, the head region, like the head, neck, shoulder area, it's a one-hit kill.
Yeah.
And being that it's, it's not loud, it's silent, you don't have to keep making silencers or anything like that. I was going through a lot of sections with Ellie doing that, and then fucking up with Abby when I got the crossbow, and standing up and pulling the trigger for the crossbow, thinking that it was going to, like, string it the way, like, the regular bow does, and just firing a fucking arrow and missing and alerting everybody to myself being there.
Maybe learn how to use crossbows better and forget.
I didn't use it as much as Abby, so it's just when I did use it, I just kept fucking forgetting.
I loved the crossbow with Abby. I thought it was better than the bow and arrow, in this.
It was better because you could, you were more likely to be able to retrieve arrows with it.
Yeah.
But I liked the control with the bow and arrow better.
So with the Abby Ellie fight, after you get through it, it's like a full on brawl, between the two of them. And at the end, neither of them die. Abby's, partner Lev, well, not partner, but like friend who she's been rescuing the entire game that we haven't even gotten into talking about.
No, I was going to talk about all that stuff after we finished with the theater scene.
But Lev, like, tells her, like, this isn't the way, let's just go. And Abby turns around and is like, if I ever see you again, you're dead. And then they just leave.
And so to be fair, like, at that scene, Dina, Ellie's girlfriend, comes in, and I think she actually, like, stabs, Abby in, like, the leg or something like that to get her off of, Ellie.
Yeah.
Cause she is choking Ellie, like, and then, she jumps, and then Abby jumps on her and starts, like, bashing her head against the ground and ends up, like, holding the knife to her throat. And Ellie's like, don't, she has nothing to do with this, she's pregnant. And Abby just goes, good.
Yeah, and like, that's when Lev, like, chimes in and is like, look, this isn't what we're doing. Let's go. And they leave. And, like, in my opinion, that would have been a great wrap-up. I would have been happy with that. I would have been happy with the farm scenes. Or at least the first one. Because there then is a time jump after this.
Yeah. So before we get to that, just to kind of hit on anything else in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any, like, moments or anything like that from, like, Ellie's 3 days that, like, stuck out to you?
You mean Abby's?
No, from Ellie. Like, anything, like, that, like, anything about, like, Dina or, like, enemies or encounters or stuff like that?
No, not really. I felt like Ellie's story was just super straightforward and nothing really, like, spectacular. Like, it was interesting to learn about what was going on in the city through her eyes, but, like, nothing else really spectacular happened in her story. It's more about her and her going deeper into darkness.
Yeah, I liked a lot of the interaction she had with, like, the people she was with. So whether it was Dina in, like, the first day and a half, or Jesse in the second day and a half.
Yeah.
I also, like, just little side note. So the scene in Hillcrest when Jesse finds you.
Yeah.
Is the, like, that's the same scene that is from a trailer where in the trailer it was Joel.
Was it?
And it's the same scene, but it's in the actual game, it's Jesse putting his hand over Ellie's mouth. And when Ellie turns around, he goes, "What, you think I would let you do this alone?" In the trailer, it was Joel.
Okay.
Apparently the demo, like the E3 demo that like press and stuff got to play, I guess 2 or 3 years ago, however long ago it was. That entire section was Joel. They built the game with Joel. They had, Troy Baker do the lines and the mocap for it just so no one would know that Joel dies.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the game. Cause, so like Greg Miller on the podcast today, he was talking about it. He's like, yeah, like some asshole after everything got spoiled literally just started tweeting at, like a bunch of assholes tweeted him the spoilers for the game. Like just so he would have to see them eventually.
Yeah.
Because people are shitty.
Yeah.
But he saw like the screenshot of Joel dead and the screenshot of Ellie at the grave and just assumed that was the end of the game because what he had played at like the demo session, Joel was there.
Yeah.
I just think that's very cool that they went that far just to lead people astray.
Yeah.
But yeah, that other than just literally like the conversations and all of the little like notes and newspaper clippings and stuff you find, like the fact that like if you read everything, there are little bits about kind of how the Seraphites came to be.
Yeah. And I was really hoping to learn more about them and was totally let down to find out that the leader of the Seraphites, or the martyr or the god of the Seraphites, she died prior to the game.
I mean, it's also been a while because you figure the one newspaper clipping you find, I don't know if you saw it, excuse me. The one newspaper clipping says that the people survived for like 6 months or something like that on rations that this woman stored because of a vision she had. And it was like her whole neighborhood apparently like survived in like a bunker with just what she had prepared for them. And you figure that would have been 6 months after the outbreak, so 20 some odd years ago. Yeah.
Which, like, I mean, she could have still been alive, but I was like, I was just annoyed because it's like these Seraphites are interesting because they somehow survived for this long. Like, I don't think it was a bunker. I think they were just surviving in city streets. Like,
the way the thing was written, I forget, they specified a place where they were all holed up.
Okay.
So if it wasn't a bunker, it was a building or something. Like, they weren't just wandering because they were found by the, like, whatever, got the Fedra or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Where my point was going is, like, the zombie things didn't attack them, didn't, like, were they safe from the zombies? Did she have some sort of control over the zombies? Or, like, what the hell?
No, because they were holed up, so there just weren't any of them to attack. But like, they didn't have to go looking for supplies. She had 6 months of supplies for her whole neighborhood.
Yeah, and it's just, like, I wanted to learn more about them, and I was just completely let down. It's like, oh, they died. She's dead. And the new heads and the new elders suck.
Yeah, I mean, that, I thought they were a super interesting sort of side antagonist.
Yeah.
Because, like, when they show up with Ellie's story, like, they just suck. Because you hear these whispers, and then arrows fucking come out of nowhere at you.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, if you get hit with one of their arrows, they stick in you, and they do damage over time. So you have to, like, find a safe place to, like, rip it out and fucking wrap yourself up.
Yeah. And it's just, like, that's where some of this game falls short, is, like, a lot of the stuff that I felt they could have built on more, the Seraphites, and maybe more about the wolves, they ended up having this epilogue that I wasn't a fan of.
See, I enjoyed the epilogue. But what about Abby? Was there anything in Abby's that stuck out to you?
What I'm calling the only boss fight in the game. There were
the monster thing in the hospital.
Yeah, that thing was so cool. And like I said, Abby already had, like, some of the better weapons. She had a friggin' flamethrower for it. But yeah, like, that's the one thing that stuck out to me, is, like, this whole game was kind of grounded, and then there was this fucking thing that, like, was kind of a bitch to fight, but was so fun yeah. as well.
Yeah, because like there are these different sort of creatures all throughout the game. Like you have your bloaters, your shamblers, your stalkers, and this was almost like a combination of those three, really.
Yeah.
At one point, like a stalker, like there is more than one infected in this thing.
Yeah.
And like, cause at one point in the fight, like one of them literally peels off and sort of like scurries around for the rest of it.
Yeah. And it was really, really cool scene, a really cool like set of like scenes to go through. And then just like in general, her growth and acceptance of Lev was really cool. Like just didn't care basically about any, like, not that she didn't care, but like Lev is the trans character that everyone references in the game, and people that hate on trans characters, that's the character people are hating on. But Abby was just like, okay, like he's a he, like that's what Lev yeah, wants. And
even at one point when so the other Seraphites were calling him by his previous name,
yeah,
she like he asks her if Abby heard that. Abby says, yes, do you want to talk about it? And he says, no. And she's just like, all right, cool, okay, whatever.
Yeah. That's fine.
And but, like, the Seraphites are such a, like, zealous group that, like, you find out through, his sister Yara, they both ran away, and are basically being hunted, because Lev wanted to be a soldier, like Yara.
Yeah.
But instead, his role was to be a wife to one of the elders.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, that's not what he wanted for his life.
Yeah.
So he shaved his head like the men did, and that basically got him expelled from the community, only their expulsion is death.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get exiled, you get destroyed.
At one point, they started to, quote, clip her wings, talking about Yara, and they, like, tied her down and broke her elbows. Or one of her elbows.
Yeah, they not even just broke her elbows. They took a hammer and shattered every bone in her arm.
Yeah,
like she had to have her arm amputated after that.
Yeah, like, and it's just like it's some crazy themes, and it was rough to see a lot of this stuff. But it was also cool to see like this main character, this hardened soldier. Okay, just not like just nonchalant like acceptance over this.
Yeah, and I mean at a certain point. So when you're at the Seraphite camp, after you've gotten Lev, and I think it's right after Yara dies, because mm-hmm. you're in that like warehouse with all the wolves hunting you.
Yeah.
She turns to Lev as he's kind of like freaking out. And she goes, "No." Or he says something like, "They're your people. Can't you do something?" And she turns around and goes, "No, you're my people."
Yeah.
Like she has just completely given up on them because he's a child. He's 13, and the wolves, even though she was trying to explain otherwise, like. They didn't care. Like, he was the enemy. He needed to die.
Yeah. But yeah, all that stuff I thought was great.
I actually really enjoyed the Seraphite section. Just because you got to see that, like, aside from them being crazy, awful zealots, like, they actually built a really, like, sustainable sort of existence there. Like, they were on an island, so there really weren't going to be many infected there. And they basically had just torn down everything from before. And built it all back up as, like, something that you'd see in, like, the 1800s, essentially.
Yeah. And that you actually kind of got to see the Space Needle, which apparently it's on an island. I didn't know that.
No, I think it's just in Seattle.
Yeah, but they're on an island, and the Space Needle's on the same island. So, like,
I don't know.
I
honestly didn't notice the Space Needle, to be honest with you.
At one point, they point you towards it and tell you to go. Yeah.
I honestly never.
Like
caught that.
She even mentions it, like, the Space Needle. Like, she asks Lev, like, you're talking about the Space Needle, right? And they point you in.
Yeah, I legitimately missed that entire part.
Yeah. So, that was just one, I was like, alright, I guess I took some liberties, or, like, because of the waters rising and everything, for some reason, maybe it is an island now, but I thought that was just kinda weird, cause I even had to look it up.
Looking at it, like, it's just kind of dead center Seattle.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what happened there.
Yeah.
But, because, like, there are a bunch of, like, islands off of Seattle.
Yeah.
So, or just, like, off of Washington State in general.
Yeah, it's just, so I for me, like, I was just like, that's weird. That's not how it's supposed to be, but okay, sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so, and So then there is the epilogue.
Yeah.
Where it, like, that whole theater scene happens, and then it cuts to a farm, and you find out that it's been at least a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years?
At most 2 years, it had to have been at least a year and a half with the size of how big JJ was.
Yeah, so Dina had the baby.
Yeah.
Her and Ellie live on a farm that is not in Jackson.
Yeah.
And they seem to have a nice little life going.
Yeah, it's nice, and, like, this scene is really strong. It's a really strong scene, and I feel like if they would have ended it after this scene, it would have been great. Because you have Ellie walking around, like, living with Dina on their farm with JJ, the baby, and then, like, at one point, basically, she goes out to take care of the sheep, and she has a flash, a PTSD flash, of Joel dying, because the door slams shut, and she's stuck in darkness. And I was just like, this would have been, for me, a good ending to the game, because it would show that she still has her problems, but she's coping with them, and she's living with them.
See, I'm actually glad that it didn't end, because you never got closure with Abby.
I feel like you got, to me, I feel like you got the closure, because technically, the way Abby sees it, like, Ellie took all of Abby's friends, and killed all of Abby's friends. The way I see it, Ellie killed all of Abby's friends. So Ellie took Abby's world. Abby killed Joel, took Ellie's world. They were even. Like.
But I don't disagree with you there. I'm just saying, you get this closure. So if the game ends at the farm, you get this closure of Ellie and, like, what her life is, but you don't know what happens with Abby. Like, all of Seattle is against her now. It's just her and Lev.
They could have given us an epilogue situation with Abby as well after the farm scene. I didn't like the extra farm scene where Tommy shows up and has a lead on where Abby is. And I didn't like the whole Ellie going after Abby. One, I feel like they missed out on a premier opportunity for either A, DLC, or B, a whole nother fucking game.
So, Druckmann already said he doesn't want to do DLC with this game.
Yeah, so, but...
And he didn't really want to make a sequel to the first Last of Us. So, like, he doesn't want to leave this one open for a sequel if he doesn't need to.
But I it could have ended with a scene, with that first scene in the farm, and then a scene from Abby where she gets in touch with potential Fireflies and doesn't get kidnapped by the Rattlers, and then it would have been closure for both characters. And I felt like that would have been a strong statement.
But see, I like the fact that they'd have that one final confrontation. I like that they basically both get just torn all the way down, because you do, like, you have this scene where you're playing as Abby, and you're in Southern California, and you think you find the Fireflies.
Yeah.
And as you're getting ready to go actually try and find them, you get knocked out and abducted by these people that, if you read any of the stuff on the grounds ahead of time, like, they basically take people in as sleeves and force them to do all of the work for them.
Yeah.
Like, they're super, super shitty people.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, it cuts back to Ellie and Tommy basically trying to guilt trip her into going after Abby because he can't because his leg and eye are fucked.
Yeah.
And, like, literally, he does end up guilting her into doing it. Like, she gives up everything to go try and get revenge and gets just fucking wrecked in doing it. Like, she was barely alive by the time she got to Abby, too.
Yeah.
And when you find Abby, like, she's essentially been crucified on a beach with a bunch of other people that are already dead. And, like, her hair got cut off and she's, like, super emaciated. Like, she went from, like, you know, muscular, could probably fucking just crush Abby or Ellie's skull if she wanted to being weak and thin and malnourished.
Yeah.
And that final fight in the water was just super, super visceral.
But, like, my problem is when nothing changed afterwards, besides the fact that now Ellie has nothing. Whereas before, Ellie had stuff. And then she sets out on this goal and doesn't achieve it because she ends up letting her go again. And I'm just like,
but so,
like, these last 3 hours that I played this game, nothing happened. Like,
but something did happen. She got to make the, so as stupid as it sounds, she got to make the decision herself. So when she finally got Abby in Seattle, it was Abby that walked away and let her live. Like, this was her finally getting that chance of, like, it was her with her hands around her throat and then realizing that, like, I don't have to do this. But, like, she already lost it. Like, it's a revenge tale. Like, that, it is showing you that revenge doesn't get you anything that you want.
But, and that's, like, I felt like they showed that throughout all of the Seattle stuff, that they didn't need this extra time.
But that's the thing, they show it, they lead you to it in Seattle, but then she gets a happy ending if they end it at the farm. Like, as much as I don't want Ellie to have a tragic ending, like, that's what this game was. It was a way to build up to Ellie losing actually everything and then having to try and rebuild from there.
I think it was poor decision making to build up this whole new region and lore of these new villains. And just, like, I feel like it was wasted on 2 hours. Like,
I mean, I agree, having, like, that whole other sort of, like, group there seems weird, but at the same time, like, you're not gonna go back to Seattle, so, like, fighting the Seraphites again doesn't make sense, or the wolves. So, like, the only thing to do would be to introduce another group that's just, and luckily, like, that was a group that was actually sinister.
Yeah, but I feel like, I don't, like, the ending with the first farm scene, I feel like would have been, like, enough of, like, okay, she still has her problems, that, like, it showed that she's always gonna have these issues, whether she got the revenge or not. Like,
see, I just disagree. Like, I like the way it ended. I like that it basically ends with, you don't know what Ellie's going to do. She left all of her stuff at that house. Dina didn't take any of her stuff, it looks like. And the last thing you see is her just walking out into the woods. It's like, is she, now that she realizes what she did, is she going to go back to Jackson? Is she going to try and make things right with Dina?
So with you saying this, then it raises more questions. And to me, I felt like everything would have been answered if they didn't do the epilogue. And if they really felt like they needed to expand on this story, I feel like it would have been better just to do this whole epilogue as a whole entire game.
But, like, that, I don't want another game of Ellie going after Abby.
But they could have done it differently. Like, okay, maybe it's a few years later. Maybe, yeah, she's going after Abby again, but this time, it ends up being like an enemy of my enemy type of thing, because she finds out that the Rattlers are so bad that they kind of end up working together. And like, it would have brought up the full on redemption for both characters had they like ended up working together to get rid of this group and then going their separate ways. Like, I felt like the last portions of it were just rushed. And it kind of like, for me, it was poor planning and poor writing. Like, the game is still great and I enjoyed it. I just wasn't a fan of how they did that.
Yeah, see, I like the way it ended. I like having that just, I liked that by the end of it, both of those characters have just been stripped down to just nothing. Like, because, like, honestly, like, neither of them are good at the end of that game. Like, Ellie did a lot of really shitty things. And, like, yes, like, she started to realize that at the end, but the fact that she was still, like, she was still so angry that she wanted to go find Abby and kill her herself just proves that she didn't learn anything.
And that's where I get, like, bummed out with the writing. Like, they built this whole story of diving into darkness, and then you do this quick, like, alright, kind of redemptive, alright, we're done, and then you just push her back into darkness, and I'm just like,
they never took her out of darkness, because the fact that they have that scene in the barn where she has that, like, PTSD, like, panic attack, like, proves that she wasn't okay still.
But that, just because she still had those then doesn't mean she doesn't have them now. Just because she went after Abby doesn't mean she doesn't have those
Those, no, I mean, that, that's true.
Like, that's how triggers work. Like, she might get a trigger later on. She might still have these problems. And she let Abby go. She didn't kill Abby. So, if she starts having these triggers again, is she gonna go after Abby again because that's who's causing it? Like, there's...
No, but, so like I said before, like, Ellie's story her story has nothing to do with redemption or the light or any of that. Her story is a revenge story. She does not get, so yes, she doesn't technically get revenge at all, like, regardless. But at the end of Seattle, she did not get to make that choice. That choice was made for her. So, like, somebody that wants revenge that badly is not going to let things settle there. They're going to pretend it's okay. They're going to try and make things all right. But as soon as that option comes up, that their revenge is still a viable option, that's going to set them back onto that path. And that's exactly what happened. Now that she made the decision that she didn't have to kill Abby, not that, like you said, like, triggers could still happen. She's still probably going to have panic attacks and stuff like that. But there's nothing that's going to push her to pursue Abby again. Like, she had that confrontation. She got to be the one to say, no, I'm done. Just fucking leave.
Yeah.
Because both confrontations they had before that, it was Abby letting Ellie go. Like, Abby was the one that told the rest of the group not to kill her and Tommy. Abby was the one that told Ellie to get the fuck out of Seattle and never let her see her again.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. We're not going to agree on this. Like, no matter how much we continue to talk about it, we're not going to agree. As long as we agree that, like, no matter your feelings for the end of the game, I at least not, we don't even have to agree that it was a great game, but no matter your feelings for it, whether you like the ending or not, it doesn't change your idea of how the game was. And I overall thought that the game was great. It's just, like, and I'm not saying it's a shitty ending. I'm just saying I'm not a fan of how they did it. I felt like it was done poorly and it was written poorly. And, like, it was unnecessary.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not going to agree on that. And that's fine. People can have different opinions. You can have the wrong opinion. It happens all the time. It's not a big deal.
I think you have the wrong opinion in this one.
I don't know, Drew. Who do you think has the wrong opinion?
Both of you. The entire game was terrible. I don't know. Like, it's something I'm looking forward to playing and finding out. I just could not bring myself to play that game at this time.
Oh, I bought it before I found out that my family had to have a 2-week quarantine. Had I found that out before I bought it, I wouldn't have bought it. Like, but I ended up playing it anyway because I was just like, you know what? I just need to get my mind out of everything. So let me just play this game. And like I said, I only played like 3 hours tops most days.
Yeah, I didn't play other than, I guess it was Sunday, I played a whole bunch, which Sunday was basically like the majority of Abby, like from the monster, basically, in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
through till the point where Abby was about to, or not Abby, Ellie was getting up to the thing, the Rattler's camp.
Yeah.
And then, like, I did that, like, last, like, 2 hours, like, the next day.
My long play day was, obviously my second to last day I played, and it was from the point where Abby leaves Lev and Yara in the construction trailer with Yara still having both arms from there until Ellie is on the boat after the time jump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that I thought was interesting is they never really specify how much time passes, particularly between Abby getting captured and Ellie finding her.
Yeah.
But, like, you can tell it's been a while because people know who she is. Like, they know the name, whether it's the shitty Rattlers or, like, the other slaves.
Yeah.
And when you find Abby, like, she is not healthy anymore.
Well,
like,
one of the Rattlers even say that, like, they captured an Abby a few months ago.
Oh, I missed that line.
You missed too much.
Did you get anybody where you didn't kill them with, like, a shot and they were the last one left and they pleaded for, they like, not even pleaded for their life, but like, yelled at you to, like, look them in the eye and then, like,
There was a few times, and it was generally, I believe, just the Seraphites did that.
Nope. I had it happen with a wolf and a Rattler.
I think I only ever had it happen with the Seraph. You know what? No, it might have been a wolf as well. But I did have it happen. And I was, that was, a letdown of those scenarios. Drew, when you play this, if you remember this, you have to kill them. Because if you try to walk away and just let them go, they pull their gun out and start attacking you again.
Yeah. So, if you kill one of them while somebody else is around you, especially if you go up to them and like melee kill them, your traveling companion will comment on it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have that happen. I forget where I heard it. It was on a podcast where somebody had that happen, and it was when they were with Ellie with Dina, and they went over and beat them with a melee weapon to death, and Dina responded with, "Ellie, what the fuck?"
Okay. But, like, that's, there's a problem, because, like, if they're begging for your, like, just kill me now, you have to, because if you walk away, they're gonna attack you. And yeah. So it's like, you're kind of forcing something that, like, for me, legitimately, if I were fighting someone and they're like, alright, you know, just kill me, I'd be like, no, you're not worth it, and I would have walked away. I just, being forced to do something that I didn't want to do, like, kind of sucked.
Yeah, and I mean, stuff like that happens. Like, a lot of games set you up in a way where it looks like you might be able to do something without action. Like,
that fake the option of choice.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, like, I don't have to murder this person, but in actuality, you can sit there and not touch anything for 20 minutes, yeah. And the game's just going to wait for you to actually make the button press.
Like, in the final fight between Ellie and Abby in the ocean, like, they give you that option, and I was like, I'm going to walk away, and it just keeps you in that, and I'm like, stop giving me the option. I hate the fake option. I really do.
Yeah. Only other two things I wanted to mention real quick. When you're in the Rattler's camp, I love that you could sneak up and just unleash the different infected.
Yeah, so there were two runners and two clickers that you could release. And like that was some of my favorite tactics in that area. And it made sense because Ellie's bleeding out and honestly, should be bleeding out. But she should be dying at that. She should be dead, honestly.
Well, so she, after she got stabbed by the thing, she pulled up her shirt at one point, and she did, like, staple the wound closed. It wasn't until she frees the prisoners in that little scuffle, like, cutscene that all those staples probably got broken when she gets, like, punched in the side.
Yeah, which, so, like, the thing, though, is Ellie's, like, 90 pounds, and I know, like, if where she got stabbed, that would have pierced one of her kidney. Like, I would be okay, me personally, because I'm a fat guy, would be okay with how deep that stab was. She shouldn't have been.
I mean, that stabbed her kind of, like, in her front. Your kidneys are in your back.
It was, like, her side, her lower back side.
Still, I'm pretty sure that there's not, where she got stabbed, there weren't organs.
I don't know. I don't think that was, like,
You're not a doctor.
I'm not. But I'm still, like, she's like a twig. Like,
also, I had multiple arrows protruding out of my body, and I just ripped them out and kept going.
Look, I mean, that's just gameplay-wise. Like, they have to make the gameplay interesting. But when you have something that's a cutscene, them getting stabbed in the side with a tree branch, and then they just go running around like it's nothing, that's just, it's weird.
But yeah, any time that I could use the infected as a weapon, I always did.
Yeah, like there was the scene when you were in the sewers as Ellie, and you're running from the wolves, and there's just a bunch of fucking clickers all over the place.
Yep, and you just throw a bottle and let them feast.
You and Eric both threw a bottle. I threw a stun grenade.
Oh no, see, so I threw a bottle, waited for all the clickers to kind of like congregate on the wolves and start killing them, and then threw a Molotov in the same spot.
Okay. I threw a stun grenade and all the wolves got stunned and the clickers just bum rushed them. And then
I never used the stun grenades.
I used them a few times. Not much.
I used I used a stun grenade once. And it actually worked out really well and it was cool. But after that, like, it was just never convenient to use them. I used a lot of the mines.
Yeah.
And the Molotovs.
I used Molotovs mostly. And eventually the stun grenades turn into smoke grenades, and honestly, they're not as useful as smoke grenades.
Yeah, I never used the smoke grenades.
Yeah.
But so the last thing I want to mention real quick, I don't know if you caught this because I didn't find out until today. Once the credits are done and it brings you back to the title screen, that's Catalina Island, where the boat is.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if you realized that or not.
I mean, I didn't realize that was Catalina Island, but I knew, like, the boat had moved, and it was a new location. I didn't realize that that was where she was trying to get to.
Yeah, so that is where, apparently, the Fireflies were, so.
Yeah.
Like, her and Lev supposedly made it to the Fireflies, if they were really Fireflies there.
Yeah. But, that's sweet.
But yeah, I think that's probably enough.
It is. There's people shooting fireworks, and I hate it.
Oh, good. I fucking hate fireworks.
Me too.
Anyway, if you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, you can support us by going to your favorite podcast platform like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, etc., and subscribe to us, review us, rate us, all of those things. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Twitter and Instagram. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can send us emails to social@one-quest.com. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with something else. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.